Here we go. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, December 7th, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, call in number is 605-562-3140. And our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send it to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. And please support our business partners. You can see their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. And also please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, this evening we're going to start out with a little bit of a somber note, a sad situation. Paul from Rare Coins, the guy who's been working with us for quite some time now, giving us reports and also giving us some of the best deals out there on particularly silver, passed away on Friday. I think it was about 4 p.m. He had a heart attack, and so he's met the Lord. I've known Paul for quite some time. We've had a lot of conversations in the past. I know him over the phone pretty much. And I suspect very strongly from my conversations, his high integrity, that he had a relationship with the Lord. I trust that that he's with the Lord in eternity. Let us keep in mind his family. I believe he has one son, which I guess would be the sole heir. So let's keep him and any other family members of Paul and close friends in our prayers tonight and pray that the Lord is merciful upon them also. Okay, now let's take a look into God's Word. The scripture tonight reading is going to be Psalm 37. Now, Psalm 37, I was looking to cut this in half and read it in two parts, but I just feel we can't do that. So I don't have too much of a subject. I do have a little bit to share after this, so I'm going to take the opportunity here to read all 40 verses. And it clearly relates to our time. It relates to our dilemma and what we need to do in order to be successful. It relates clearly to that. And ultimately, we ought to be a virtuous people. So Psalm 37, verse 1. Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity. For they shall soon be cut down like the grass and withered as a green herb. Trust in Jehovah and do good, so shalt thou dwell in the land, and truly thou shalt be fed. Delight thyself also in Jehovah, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Commit thy way unto Jehovah, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light, and thy judgment as the noonday. Rest in Jehovah and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in the way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil, for evildoers shall be cut off. But those that wait upon Jehovah, they shall inherit the earth. For yet a little while, and the wicked shall not be. Yea, thou shalt delight diligently consider his place, and it shall not be. But the meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. The wicked plotteth against the just, and gnasheth upon him with his teeth. Jehovah shall laugh at him, for he seeth that his day is coming. The wicked have drawn out the sword, and have bent their bow to cast down the poor and needy, and to slay such as be of upright conversations. Their sword shall enter into their own heart, and their bows shall be broken. A little that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholdeth the righteous. Jehovah knoweth the days of the upright, and their inheritance shall be forever. They shall not be ashamed in the evil time, and in the days of famine they shall be satisfied. But the wicked shall perish, and the enemies of Jehovah shall be as fat lambs. They shall consume, into smoke shall they consume away. The wicked borroweth and payeth not again, but the righteous showeth mercy and giveth. For such as be blessed of him shall inherit the earth, and they that be cursed of him shall be cut off. The steps of a good man are ordered by Jehovah, and he delighteth in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for Jehovah upholdeth him in his hand. I have been young, and now am old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, for his seed begging bread. He is ever merciful, and lendeth, and his seed is blessed. Depart from evil, and do good, and dwell forevermore. For Jehovah loveth judgment, and forsaketh not his saints. They are preserved forever, but the seed of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land, and dwell therein forever. The mouth of the righteous speaketh wisdom, and his tongue speaketh or talketh of judgment. The law of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall slide. The wicked watch the righteous, and seek to slay him. Jehovah will not leave him in his hands, nor condemn him when he is judged. Wait on the Lord, and keep his way, and he shall exalt thee to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, thou shalt see it. I have seen the wicked in great power, and spreading himself like a green bay tree. Yet he passed away, and lo, he was not. Yea, I sought him, but he could not be found. Mark the perfect man, and behold the upright, for the end of that man is peace. But the transgressors shall be destroyed together, the end of the wicked shall be cut off. But the salvation of the righteous is of Jehovah. He is their strength in the time of trouble. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them, because they trust in him. Okay, that was Psalm 37, 1 through 40. And I know when I read this, I see this speaking to us very clearly, that we are to trust in the Lord and he will deliver us. The wicked shall be broken. That's why I really rest in the work that we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. We just have to do the right thing, whatever that is, and whatever is before us at any given time. Just do the right thing, and that will cause that we should receive the blessings of God. And God never forsakes his people. He always delivers. So we can trust that that will be. We will not win this war alone. Only God can really win this war. But we must be his arm of righteousness just by doing the right thing. That's all we need to do. And that's what we're doing. And we're revealing the evils within our government, particularly in the courts, but also throughout the whole government. We're just revealing it. The power of the pen is very mighty. And that's our power. Time and truth will take down the enemy. Darkness can survive light only so long. Darkness will succumb to the light. Okay, so the things we're doing, I'd like to just read a couple of quotes from some of our founding fathers and focus in a little bit on our purpose. And, it is the hand of providence that guides us. And it's the principles of God that we need to preserve, and we need to preserve them in our court. And if they're preserved in our court, they will be preserved throughout the entire governing body, the entire. The other two arms of government, branches, will be controlled by the courts. If they break the law, they'll be corrected or removed. And so we need to guard freedom. And we guard freedom with virtue. And also we need to educate the people. And the purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to bring forth an education to the people, to prepare the people so that they're able to care for themselves and get into a court and or any place and to have a knowledge of what's really going on. So we're saved by the knowledge also. We must understand the enemy and understand what we need to do. So we must have knowledge of our founders, and we must have knowledge of the Constitution. That's the key, the knowledge of common law. And the Constitution is a common law document. Okay, concerning, let's see, providence. And providence is really, it's guardianship and control by a deity. That's what providence is. Our founding fathers clearly believed that they were guided by providence. They were guided by the hand of a deity. They believed that the end results of whatever it is, the war and everything they've worked and fought for, was under the control of the governor of the universe. And they believe that. And I do too. George Washington, concerning the adoption of the Constitution, said, will demonstrate as visibly the finger of providence as any possible event in the course of human affairs can ever designate it. There are some people out there that complain about the Constitution. They say it isn't perfect, there's problems, and there's this, and there's that. And there's a couple of places that I might agree with them, but they're totally, in two places particularly. Maybe one day we'll talk about those two places. But they have no power. They have no thrust. They have nothing. It cannot affect us, at least not in this day and age, because of where we're at and just the nature of shall I say, reality today and opposed to reality 200 years ago. So this Constitution, I have a huge faith in. The Constitution is one of the best documents ever written by man. Of course, the Bible was penned by man, but written by God, so that would, of course, oversee it. But as far as mankind is concerned, it clearly is one of the best documents ever written by man. The Bill of Rights is part of the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, the Constitution must be read in light of the Bill of Rights. And that is really the masterpiece part, is the Bill of Rights. Okay, Benjamin Franklin said, I have so much faith in the general government of the world by providence that I can hardly conceive a transaction, that is the framing of the Constitution, of such momentous importance to the welfare of millions should be suffered or allowed, is what suffered, he's referring to suffered, welfare of millions should be allowed to pass without being in some degree influenced, guided and governed by the omnipotent and beneficent ruler in whom all inferior spirits live and move and have their being. That was Benjamin Franklin. So we have George Washington and Benjamin Franklin strongly believing in the providence, the hand of God. And I know Jefferson did too, that they all did. But we need to preserve the principles. Thomas Jefferson said, in questions of power, then let no more be heard of confidence of men, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. And that is our job. That is what we have to do. We have to bind down the judiciary first with the chains of the Constitution. And when we bind down the judiciary and take control of the court and reestablish the king of the court, and justice now can go forth out of that court, and we can take total control of the, and that is we the people, not we a few people or a couple of people, we the people, by the mercy of God, God will take total control of the rest of the government, the other two branches of government, because if they break the law, they'll have to answer in courts of law. John Adams, I first saw the concerning preserving the principle, preserving the Constitution. I first saw the Constitution of the United States in a foreign country. I read it with great satisfaction. As the result of good heads prompted by good hearts, I have repeatedly laid myself under the most serious obligations to support the Constitution. What other form of government indeed can be so well deserve or our esteem and love? And that was John Adams. Thomas Jefferson said, "I, however, have placed economy among the first and most important republican virtues, and public debt as the greatest of dangers to be feared. To preserve our independence, we must not let our rulers load us up with perpetual debt. I am for a government vigorously frugal and simple." Thomas Jefferson. And of course, that's exactly what they have done. They have loaded us up with perpetual debt. But you know what? That debt belongs to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve is not part of our government. We, the people, are not responsible for that debt, because they are fraudulent frauds who have created this great fraud upon the American people. And so, really, this is not our debt. But there are solutions on how to deal with this once we can get into the courts, and it could be dealt with very quickly, and everything could be put back in place relatively quickly, which would really give us peace with other nations at the same time. And that's the key, because that's really the danger, other nations coming down against us over debt. Okay, you know, freedom and virtue must be guarded. Or shall I say, freedom must be guarded with virtue. Okay, Benjamin Franklin said, "Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters." And that's why government is so large. We need to become a virtuous people again. John Adams said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and a religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." That's John Adams. Samuel Adams, "The sum of all is, if we would most truly enjoy the gift of heaven, let us become a virtuous people. Then shall we both deserve and enjoy it. While on the other hand, if we are universally vicious and debauchled in our manners, through the form, though the form of our Constitution carries the face of the most exalted freedom, we shall in reality be the most abject slaves." And indeed, at this point, we suffer that problem. That was Samuel Adams. George Washington, in his farewell address, said, of all the dispositions and habits which led to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable to supports. In vain would they have a man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and to cherish them. Let it simply be asked, where is the security for prosperity, for reputation, for life, if the sense of moral and religious obligations desert the oaths which are the instruments of investigation in courts of justice? And indeed, you know, look at, we really have a serious problem, whereas there is no real oaths in a court of law. I in the 5 or 6 years I've been in the courts, I've never seen a Bible. And we need to return that Bible, and people need to swear on that Bible. And finally, as far as guarding through virtue, Thomas Jefferson, "We in America do not have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate. All tyranny needs to gain a foothold. Needs to gain a foothold is for people of good conscience to remain silent. Silent no more." Now, educating the solution ultimately is educating the people. And James Madison said, "A well-instructed people alone can be permanently a free people." George Washington said, "A primary object should be the education of our youth in the science of government in a republic, which species of knowledge can be equally important. And what duty more pressing than communicating it to those who are to be the future guardians of the liberties of the country?" Again, George Washington. Thomas Jefferson, and this is one of the quotes that we have right up there in the first page of our website, "I know of no safer depository of the ultimate powers of society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power. Again, Thomas Jefferson, the good sense of the people will always be found to be the best army. They may be led astray for a moment, but will soon correct themselves. And one more final quote, again, Thomas Jefferson. Say whether peace is best preserved by giving energy to the government or information to the people. This last is the most certain and the most legitimate engine of government. Educate and inform the whole mass of people. Enable them to see that it is their interest to preserve peace and order, and they will preserve them. And it requires no very high degree of education to convince them of this. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. Again, Thomas Jefferson. In the preamble to the Constitution, we read the purpose of the Constitution. They have commands, really, to follow. And the purpose of government is exactly for this, and I'll try to emphasize it. I'm going to read the entire paragraph of the preamble. We, the people of the United States, in order to perform a more perfect union, number one, establish justice, number two, ensure domestic tranquility, number three, provide for the common defense, number four, promote the general welfare, number five, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. I think there was six. Oh, yes, to form a more perfect union, that is number one. To ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So anything our government does, they should be guided by the preamble to the United States. If whatever it is that they are doing, whatever laws they are creating, if it does not apply to the protection and the expansion of these six directives from we the people who ordained and established this Constitution, we are above the Constitution, for we are its creators. We created it for them. They are below the Constitution, and they are to be obedient. So they will be held accountable. There's a lot of really good news, little things that's happening here or there, little things we become aware of, and that really kind of give us some real strong hope that things are advancing in a way that we should hope and see them advancing. But nevertheless, on a more somber note concerning these things, we do have the enemy amongst us. And from time to time, we've had the debacles in different states, and we're not going to revisit those debacles, but we've had, that I can think of off the top of my head, three debacles where people just would not conform to the plan of NLA. Even after being told, if you have your own plan, God bless you, we'll pray for you, but go do it somewhere else. This is not the place to do it. We need to stay pure and focused. We will get ourselves in trouble if we get off of the path that we are on. And the path that we are on ultimately really is identified by jurisdiction and fraud. We do not give any credit, any merit, any reality to fraud. The fiction of court is a fraud. We speak of it only from the standpoint that it is fraudulent, criminal, and anybody who participates with it and applies it against we the people is guilty of fraud and subversion against the people of the United States and also the Constitution for the United States of America. So they are guilty of that fraud. They're guilty of that subversion. And that's our position. Now, we have had the enemies come into our group, and because of the nature of the way we do things and the principles that we stand on, we are truly 100% governed by principles. When the bottom line, when we discover a problem, we have to deal with it. There's a leadership roles that have to be there for the purpose of trying to give direction, correct problems, and stay on that path and focus. The bottom line is, what is the principal thing to do? And no matter how hard it is, we do the principal things. Even if we have to cut off a member, then we're going to cut off that member under principle. We always give opportunity for mercy. We always give opportunity for repentance. We always give opportunity for people to return and just do the right thing. To admit that they made an error and they went the wrong direction and they'll do better. But if they refuse to do that, and they're governed by the wrong powers, the wrong authority. There's nothing more that we could do than just cut them off. We can't continue. Now, I don't want to say that they are all-out enemies of the United States of America from the standpoint that they are part of the conspiracy. But these people are clearly, clearly useful idiots. And I know people, anybody who took the civics course knows exactly where that phrase comes from, useful idiots. And so these people are clearly that. Maybe some of them are the enemy, I don't know. But these people are governed by the lust of money and the lust of power, the lust of authority. It's all ego, ego and money. And that's my conclusion. When I look at these things and I discover what goes on and I get the reports and we get together to try to discover what we can do to fix these problems, those are always one of the solutions. It's ego, it's money, it's power, it's greed. And they have come into our group, and again, this has happened three times already, with a private agenda in order to take control, in order to rob us of our membership and subvert the people and get the people in trouble. The last group of people that did the wrong thing, and we warned them, we told them they'd end up in jail, and indeed they did end up in jail, and that's where they are today. We do not mess around with any way of giving any adherence to the fiction. We don't use the fiction. We don't argue with the fiction. It's a fraud. And if you deal with it in any other way, if you try to make the argument, you're given it credibility, you're given it authority, you're given it power, and you're not calling it a fraud. I have heard throughout the Internet constantly, oh, they're not lawful, but it's legal. They're legal. No, they're not legal. They are not legal. The word legal means that it's lawful. They are not legal. They are a fraud. They built upon fraudulent laws, statutes, and they sneak these little things in. And it came in the very beginning of our country, back in 1789, when the Constitution was signed. The ink wasn't even dry yet. Within just months after that, it was the Judiciary Act of 1789. And the Judiciary Act of 1789 really had a lot of good stuff in it. It really laid out how the government should operate in certain ways, how individuals should be chosen. And that power and authority was given to them in the Constitution, clearly. And they did the right job. They did the good job. They did the right thing. And in that came out the appointing of the officers. And one of the problems that came up not long after the appointing of certain officers, of certain powers and authorities by the President of the United States, particularly, for instance, a chief judge, okay, also the U.S. Marshal, there's one for all 94 federal districts, and also the chief clerk, okay. Those people are appointed by the president. And in Marbury versus Madison, I believe that was 1802 or 1803, I think it was 1802, in Marbury versus Madison, it clarified some of the problems that was in the Judiciary Act of 1789, but also dealt with the issue of the appointments. And the conclusion in Marbury versus Madison, which stands to this very day, is that the president appointed, but he's been given no power to take away that appointment. He cannot fire anybody he has appointed. They must serve out their entire term. That was one of the decisions of Marbury versus Madison. And again, that stands to this very day. It's extremely important for clerks to understand that they have been appointed, or they should have been appointed if they wouldn't, but they are appointed individuals. They took an oath, and I'm talking about the chief clerk in a federal district. There's one for every federal district. Even though they may have more, three or four or so on, but there's only one, okay? Same thing as chief judge here and a chief judge there. There's only one in a district. That's it. And they're appointed by the president, and they cannot be removed from office. A judge cannot remove a clerk. Therefore, this clerk should not be intimidated by that judge when they're told or forced or intimidated in one way or another to not file a paper, to remove a paper, to conceal a paper, to destroy a paper. They need to stand up, and they're going to be held responsible. We're sending papers out, as a matter of fact. We're preparing, and we'll be getting it out this week to the clerks directly, by name, individually, in each individual district to let them know that what their duty is, and they're going to be held responsible, and they have their one last chance to do the right thing, and otherwise they will be marked for indictment. Now, going back to the problem that we have here in National Liberty Alliance, one of the things these people are doing, they have what's called the Class of Higher Learning, and this is in Texas, okay? We removed all state coordinators in Texas. Any state coordinator that has been removed and is not part of this this assault against the principles of what we have been putting together for years and working diligently to keep and to maintain. If we unjustly removed you, by all means, give us a call and explain. We will be calling these people one at a time to make contact to discover where they stand. But at this point, they've been removed. There is no leadership in Texas. There are numerous people, we know who they are, who's out there teaching and making money. They've been charging people, and we're just finding out about this, and some of these people were involved in working, and this was the big debacle. I have no problem to say this at this point, that this is the really big debacle that we really didn't get into detail about when we were doing the habeas corpuses for quite some time, and then we just never went anywhere. We never got anywhere with it. And when we finally called them down to say, hey, come on, you know, it's time to report what you got. Wait, what are you doing here? It took them 2 or 3 weeks, and they reported gibberish, nothing. Just months of work, months of people sending in information and papers. And meanwhile, we're finding out that this individual and others have been charging people. National Liberty Alliance charges nobody for nothing. Let me repeat that. National Liberty Alliance charges nobody for nothing. We do not require any payment for any help that we offer. When people want a habeas corpus, we will oblige them. We do not charge them. We ask them to help us with a donation to offset the cost. It costs between $60 to $100 in mailing every time we do a paper. There's lots of people to be mailed to. Some of them are certified. It's a series of 3, 4, 5 mailings to get the whole process completed. And some of these people must be certified at all times. The court clerk must be certified, every paper we send to them, and also the chief judge. And so, and of course, the paper and the printing and the tone and so on, all of this costs money. And so we've estimated about $60 to $100. So there are people who have not given us that $60 or the $100. We've done it anyway, because look, if people can't afford it, we're not going to hold them back. We're not going to, you know, we're not working here for money. We're not interested in money. We need money to live, so there is an interest of getting an income and people given to us so that we can continue and pay the bills and do what we have to do. But that's not our motivation. Certainly, you know, we're not here to make money. Nevertheless, these people have charged people for things. They've told them that they needed a PGA, which is a private attorney general. They sent them certain paperwork that we had no part of, none whatsoever. They're charging money. They're charging $150 a month for their class of higher learning, and I can call it the lowest learning you can learn, because they're right off point on every single point. I mean, they look good in certain areas. They have certain knowledge about how the fiction works, but we're not into fiction. They hold up the idea of article courts being legal. They claim that there's an Article 4 court, and that all courts right now, all the federal courts are Article 4 courts, and therefore they're not constitutional. That's a lie straight from hell. It's not true at all. It is true they are not operating according to common law, and they try to rest in the Judiciary Act of 1789, which ultimately made the rules the rules of chancery of the court, which is an abomination compared to common law. It's an abomination. They have no authority. Marbury versus Madison dealt with that and other things in that particular act that was done. But again, in that act, there was a lot of great stuff. It really was very helpful in how government runs and laid out the processes. And that was exactly what they were supposed to do. But the enemy was there sticking little things in and causing problems. But these people are teaching people that there's an Article 4 court and you have to go into their sandbox and argue it. You're not going to win in their sandbox box arguing, trying to change them to a different jurisdiction or whatever it is that they do. I don't know. But they claim that they're teaching people to become private attorney generals, PAGs, okay, and they're teaching them how to get out there and argue in the courts, both statutory and common law. That there tells me they haven't got a clue on understanding either of the two. Common law and statutory law is like oil and water. They do not mix, and they will never mix. You'll never be able to make that mix. Statutes have its purpose. We gave the authority to the legislature to legislate statutes for the purpose of governing. Okay, and that's it. And it's very well detailed in Article 1, Section 8 or 9. I always get that confused. Let me go double check to make sure. It looks like it's 9. Section 8. We gave the powers to Congress, 18 powers. And if it's not in here, they don't have the power to legislate it. And so they do have the power to legislate the necessary statutes to control the necessary things that they have been put in charge to be able to control in order to achieve the directive that we have given to them under the preamble of the Constitution. Okay, so again, it's for the purpose of making a more perfect union. Establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. And anything that doesn't conclude with accomplishing those things and supporting those things don't belong there. So we will see good statutes in there. For instance, there's some good statutes, and we've used them in 42, USC 42 and USC 18 under the kidnapping by foreign courts. That's what that's all about, by judges who are criminals and need to be put in jail. But anyway, these people go on, they're charging $150 for their course under our name. Okay, we do know the names of some of these people. I'm not going to bring their names up, but we do know the names of some of these people, and they are forever banned from National Liberty Alliance. And as we find any more, we will forever ban them. We have removed the power and authority that of any people that we're aware of might be part of this, at least until we find out whether they are or not. They have charged people $5,000 to retain their services through National Liberty Alliance using our membership. These people are unprincipled individuals. They're dishonorable. And if I had my way, I'd have them in jail. I was very strong on potentially going after these people in a legal arena, but I've been convinced that we'd only be wasting, not necessarily wasting our time, but wasting our energies. And they're right, so we're not going to pursue that. But later on, we might do something about this, because these people were subverting the only hope that I know of. I am not aware of any other place where we have hope to peacefully save America. And they work to subvert it. I guess that's all I have to say about that. But just so people know, if you get wind of things taking place down in Texas, that's what it's all about. And we are going to get to the bottom of every single one of these people and deal with them. Now, there's a lot of people in Texas. They got like, goodness, I was looking to see how many members we have there. We have like 353 members in Texas, okay? And we do have a lot of people who have signed up as county organizers, so we'll start calling some of those people to see if they're willing to take on the job of being a state coordinator, help coordinate the formation of Texas. And so anybody here that is from Texas that would like to step up and do that, please get a hold of Gary or Jan or Robert. You'll find them up on our directory page. Just click on the directory. Get a hold of somebody and let them know that you're interested. And Gary is the one that goes in there and flips the switches for that. So you can get a hold of Gary directly, or you can talk with Jan, and Jan will get a hold of Gary. And let's start working better for Texas. So anybody who has been injured by these people out in Texas and have been fooled and defrauded, and they're going to end up, anybody who's following those protocols that they're setting up, okay, I assure you that some of those people that are going to go into the courts and execute those things, they're going to jail. I've already seen people doing those things, and they go to jail. So we're very, very careful not to put ourselves into jeopardy. We are so 100% on the law, so 100% on the Constitution, the conclusions of the United States Supreme Court, the words of our founding fathers. We do not veer from that at all, and it's very safe to be. They're afraid to come up against us to make an argument because they don't want those words out. You know, just on a side note here, something I've saw on a couple of programs I was watching. One of the programs, and I'm not going to mention the names of the programs, or maybe I will. One of them was on the person of interest. I think they got 5 seasons or something, or 4 seasons there. And they were talking about the subverters against the Constitution, subverters against we the people, America. They were calling them terrorists. And they referred to the leadership as founding fathers. I wonder why they did that. Okay, there was another program I just recently saw. What was it? The Criminal Minds. Okay, where they were looking at this hierarchy of subverters against the America. They were terrorists. Okay, just like the other program, they were terrorists, and they had code names. And the highest code name was named George Washington. Second in command was Benjamin Franklin. Now, what are these people trying to do out there in the movie-making world, in Hollywood, doing these kind of things, calling these people founding fathers, referring to George Washington, and they really hate Thomas Jefferson. They really despise Thomas Jefferson. So anyway, this is some of the things the enemy's been doing. They use the media to do it. And, of course, we're aware of this, and we're going to expose everything. And we have been exposing. Nobody has exposed what they're doing like we have exposed. Nobody has done the exposure. And we put it in a way that they cannot run away from it. You cannot hide it. They cannot clean it up, okay, by reporting it in all 94 courts and by getting it out to all elected officials, everybody, through faxes. You can't erase that, okay? You can't expunge it because that's what they love to do. And they feel powerful and strong and good because they know the cases are going to be expunged. But they're nervous of us, because they cannot expunge our case. We're too far out there, too many places, and they can't do it. But anyway, again, I apologize if anybody has been injured by these people out there in Texas, and I don't know if it's grown to other places, but we are looking into it. And believe me, if I have my way in the future, we're going to deal with those people. But in any event, I don't want to be vengeful or anything, but justice is important, and we need to consider what we're doing here and how important it is. I don't know if we have any particular questions. Gary, if we got any questions, maybe you can ask them. I'm not aware of anything.
Yeah, we do. We got a good one here. Nice, easy question after all this.
And while we're doing that, I'm going to ask that nobody get into the Q&A. I'm in lecture mode. I'm going to turn into Q&A, but please, nobody get into it. Unless you're in Texas and would like to talk and express anything, then only Texans, please get into the Q&A. So if there's anybody from Texas that would like to talk about it, not Michigan, let me clear if I'm mistaken you, okay, if that person from Michigan is actually from Texas and we got you wrongly put in, then by all means, come back into the queue. But only Texas. Okay, while we're doing the Q&A, anybody from Texas who would like to pipe in, that has any knowledge of things going on, or would like to step up and take over the leadership. Texas is huge. We need a lot of leaders out there. So, hey, Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, nice, easy question. Are there punitive damages in common law? Can you talk about that a little as to how they are calculated or considered?
Well, look at, you know, any kind of punitive damages, ultimately we go into the Bible for, and that's where I would go. Look at common law and natural law are synonymous. They're one and the same. It's called common law. It's because it's the law that's common unto all men. All men. So what law is common unto all men? That's the law of God. That's natural law. Now, they have subverted that, okay? And they have different common law, the common law of England that holds the natural law, but they have gone off, gone off base over there. And even in America, they've tried to make common law is really out of law, out of things, precedences and things of that nature. But that's not what common law is. It's really natural law. So any kind of punitive damage, I personally, and we're going to do some writing on this, so maybe it'll help orientate, when we the people as administrators orientate the juries, and if they need to understand, one of the things we want them to understand is some kind of a way of calculating damages. And so, for instance, the Bible does give us examples. If you steal a man's ox, you got to replace it with four. Okay, things like that. So we can go into the Bible and start pulling out some of those principles. We can also pull out some logical ideas and thoughts, because we're the people, we can do what we want. But we want to be just. We don't want to be extreme. You know, nobody gets $1 billion. Nobody needs $1 billion. If that's way, no matter what it is, way too much. We the people in generally could collectively have been damaged by trillions of dollars. And there is a plan to deal with that, believe it or not. There is a way to deal with that. We're not going to talk about those things, but we will write on those things and share it at the time after we get into power, so we the people can collectively consider what needs to be done in order to protect ourselves as a people here in America, and also to make peace with those who are think that they're we're in debt to them, which, we don't have a debt, okay? The Federal Reserve has a debt, not we the people. So, but again, I'll leave that aside. So, yeah, all there right. Are biblical principles for that.
Okay, quickie question here from me. The Q&A appears off, and people
Q&A is on, and I see people in.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, I don't have that locked.
I don't know if – I doubt it. If you hit the recycle, I think you may get lost and come back.
But I have a very interesting question here.
Yeah.
That I'd like to read from somebody. I want to read the whole question because I think it's cogent. Why is the state not to be considered an injured party when bringing up jurisdictional issues in court? I understand the reason is that it is not one of the people, i.e. a fiction. If that be true, then all corporations are not to be considered injured parties, yes or no?
Well, yeah, a fiction cannot be an injured party. A state is a fiction and cannot be an injured party. It's a legal fiction. It's a trust for the people, but the state in itself isn't an injured party. We, the people, collectively are injured parties to what these people have done through their corporations, and they have cloaked every form of government, from the federal to the state to the county down to the town and the village. They have cloaked them with corporations. So we have moved into corporatism, and corporatism is ultimately synonymous with fascism. So it's the when you incorporate all of the government at every level, you now are in a position to move right into fascism. Because why? You've got the people used to corporate police departments and corporate mayors and corporate town boards that are able to write laws and. Nowhere has they've been given the power to write laws on a town level. The only legislation can be done is on the county and state level, and of course the federal level. But nevertheless, what was exactly the question? So I can get back to it.
Well, the question is.
Go ahead. Yeah, the corporation or the state being an injured party. Yeah, the state can never be an injured party. The corporation itself can never be an injured party. The corporation in common law cannot sue a person. It's just not possible. Now, an individual from that corporation who had lost some losses or something somehow, they could sue him from person to person, but the corporation can't do it. There must be there must be an injured party. There must be a contract broken, and it must be a sworn affidavit in order to apply something in court as far as common law is concerned. If there's no sworn affidavit, there is no case. Period. End of subject. And very few cases I've ever seen has sworn affidavits, with the exception of the paperwork that we do. I mean, we have affidavits, and when I go into court, we start off with an affidavit. A lot of cases look like they have affidavits, but it's really the lawyer playing a game, and nobody really. It's all second-hand, third-hand, third-party information, so it has no power, no authority, no oomph. So, yeah, there is no way a corporation or a state, because it's not a person, although they've made it a person in numerous places. And I just read an audit in USC 26 where they made it a place that a person, a corporation is a person. And they did that in order to really harmonize things, because even in Chancery, they have some of this stuff. But they don't really adhere to their own rules anyway, unless they want to. They do it for themselves. But when we come in and use their rules, they won't let them be used. That's why you're never going to win in their sandbox under their terms. So you got to get out, and you got to get into common law courts. So no power, no authority for a corporation to sue.
Gotcha.
Or a state.
All right, that's it for the questions.
Okay, and that is the clear thing, you know. When you have a district attorney going after somebody and there's no grand jury, there's the state claiming to be injured and coming in. And then when they go to the grand jury, they come in as the state that's in the injured party. They're saying it's the people. And again, it's a fraud. And there is no sworn affidavits to support anything. Okay, so if that's it, let's see. I think I'm at the end, just looking at my notes real quick. I've covered everything that I wanted to cover. I'm not sure, just for a final thought concerning Paul's business, I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. I don't, from what I heard, his son is not capable of taking over the business, but that may not be true. I don't know. But we do want an individual, if we're going to deal with someone that is honorable and honest and really understands what we're doing. So we would try to find someone to replace that, because providing silver and gold to people is a very, very important thing that needs to be done, and people need to realize that they need to get gold and silver. And to find someone that will give us some donations by using our membership to make sales and giving us the best prices, that's a good thing. Right now, we don't have Paul with us anymore, so if people need to buy those things, you need to find the best deal you can. But we will try to find some kind of a solution to offer something here also that will also support what we're doing, offering people silver at the best prices they can get it. Okay, that's it for me. Gerard, are you here? I've been trying to get Gerard all day, so I don't know if he's in today. I don't see him here. Okay, I guess I'll pass it over to you, Gary, and I'll just...
Wait, you got the Q&A. You got the Q&A.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, well, this looks like David from Michigan. Do you have something to say concerning Texas? Because that's all I want right now. Anybody else? I don't want to talk to anybody until we deal with Texas. Anybody that wants to say something about Texas?
Well, I just wanted to ask if you were going to be following up on that amicus curiae. I haven't been able to reach anybody for the past month since I had that promise, and that those documents that I sent to you for the interlocutory appeal and that memorandum of law, it looks to me like they're clicking and things are happening with it, and I'm just wondering what you guys have actually done to follow up on your assurances to me.
Yeah, I'm not in a position to really say much on that. I'd have to be a little more briefed on it. But why don't you give me a call during the day tomorrow, and we'll get on the phone. Maybe we'll pull a few other people in, and we'll talk about it.
Am I to know what number that's supposed to be?
Yeah, call 845-233-6560. 845-233-6560. And I'm looking up at my calendar. You know, I'm just going to be doing office work tomorrow, so I shouldn't have a problem not being here. What time zone are you on?
I'm in Eastern Standard Time.
Oh, okay. Is the number you're talking to me, I'm looking at the number, the number you're talking to me on, is that the number you're going to be calling me from?
Actually, if you want, I will, but I have a cell phone number that I would probably be calling from. It's also
Do you
want
to give me that cell phone number or no?
Sure, I can do that. Hopefully
okay.
Nobody else will be calling. 248.
Well, we really haven't had a problem with people abusing phones and microphones.
Well, I hope they respect that. And
yeah, they will.
248-974-7703. That's 7703.
Okay, and your name's David, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to mark that so that when I see your call coming in, that I will definitely take it. I get a lot of calls that come through, and a lot of them I let go through to the secretary now because I just can't get involved in long conversations throughout the day. I'll never get anything done. But from time to time, I answer my phone when I can. But I will look for your call. What time do you think you might call?
I'll call until I reach you, and what time would you like me to start trying?
I don't know, probably call around 11, 12.
Okay, I'll do that. 11 o'clock.
Okay.
Thank you,
sir. Talk to you later, David. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, next caller, VoIP dialer, CenturyLink.net.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay. My name is Gene Notes, and I'm from Price County, Wisconsin. And I just have a couple quick questions for you. I'm on your website. There used to be on
can you come back into the queue after we finish with Texas?
Oh yes, I certainly can. I'm sorry,
okay.
John.
As soon as I finish with Texas, I'll clear the queue and I'll call for the queue open again. Okay.
Okay.
We only got a couple of people left, so.
Yeah. Do I need to redial in or?
No. I'm going to disconnect you, and when we reopen the queue, then hit *6 to get into the queue. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay, the next caller is 2325. Are you from Texas?
Yes, I am. It's Ginger,
okay.
John. Hi, Gary.
Hello, Ginger.
Who is this?
Okay.
This is Ginger.
Ginger, okay, Ginger. How you doing? Can you give us some insight?
Just for everybody's clarification, I'm smack dab in the middle of this Texas situation.
Right.
So just wanted to thank Gary for all his guidance. Thank you, Gary. And then I would ask that you would send a little written something, you know, to us here in Texas.
Yeah, I'm going to have Gary, and I think I've already asked Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, to give me a synopsis of all the things going on. Without mentioning names, and we would send a email out to everyone in Texas and give them info, let them know basically what's going on, and that they can come listen to this Monday night call, the first hour, to really get a little bit more insight on what's going on. So,
just clarification. I'm kind of tangible. I like to see the things in writing, and so the explanation I think tonight was pretty good. And so if you'll just shoot out a little email to everybody so that we know the dangers that we were facing. I guess that was my major concern, was to make certain that the rest of the Texas folks knew what was, what had transpired, what the dangers were of moving forward in this other direction. So,
right. Well, the people who are moving in those directions, just so everybody knows, you will eventually be contacted by the international grand jury and an international movement, and that is connected to a national movement here in the United States, which actually, when you look at the way they're structured, it is subversion against the United States of America, whereas they are electing governors for each of the states. They are also electing or choosing judges. I got a call from somebody and is abruptly stopped as soon as I say, wait a second, you're talking about subversion against the United States. And then they stopped talking about it. And basically they were looking to go out and start arresting people. And I said, well, who's going to arrest them? Well, we are. What are you going to do with them? We're going to put them in jail. What jail are you going to put them in? Well, we're going to create our own. I mean, it was very strange, but this group, you know, they're subverting a lot of liberty groups that are involved in the court business and trying to do something in the judiciary, and they are convincing them to join on. I am convinced that whole thing is being done in order for them to come out at some point to collect all these people collectively. Once they know who they all are and everything, and they've been working like the devil to trying to get us involved with them for over a year now. No, this is they've been, we've had calls from people, all kinds of stuff, and they have worked overtime. I mean, they have gotten to the point where they told me that I should resign my position with National Liberty Alliance, step aside, and let someone else take the lead that's more capable of doing this than I am. And they had three or four people, and none of them had principles. I knew every one of them. And they all of them betrayed me and betrayed National Liberty Alliance and used information as members from places and information that they had that, for their own purpose. But in any event, this is what's going on. And so anybody dabbling in that area will eventually be pulled into that part and sold another bill of goods, and they're going to get themselves in trouble and find themselves in jail. It will be a very, very easy case for the government to make that the people would go along with, that when they start talking about, well, these people went out and created their own government, and they opened their own jails, and they're going to arrest people, and they got their own courts and their own judges. I mean, the people will agree that's subversion against the United States of America. You can't do that. Look, we have a really great structure in place. And what we have is we have tyrants who have come in and taken positions and have and is terrorizing we, the people, ultimately through the government, using the government. We need, this is not, this is a really a criminal problem. It's really these people, it's organized crime is what it is. And they control people either they're useful idiots, or they get something on them, or they take a bribe, they give them a bribe, they get them money, they give them power, and they go along with these things. And they only know as much as they need to know in order for them to use whatever office they're using to do whatever it is that they want to do. But collectively, really, they're assaulting all of us. But that's where these people, a lot of these people are going to end up ultimately to funnel into that part to think that they're going to do something. And I can tell you that the leadership on that level of things, I know most of them, I've had contact with most of them. Well, I won't say most, a good part of them I have had contact over the years with, because they've contacted me and talked to me, and I've had dialogue with them. And I've also told them, well, you're doing something different than what we're doing, and we got a different kind of plan. And they didn't like that, and it was always an argument, and then all of a sudden they hate us and say terrible things about us. But I can tell you that all of them that I have personally met, over the phone only though, all of them that I have personally met and had dialogue with and some kind of communications, all of them are unprincipled individuals, filled with a lot of ego. And we had one member who left us and then went and joined with them, forces with them, and then they threw him out. They used his whatever he had and just threw him aside. I mean, that's what they're up against there. They're just fighting for who's going to be the top guy. You know, I've said this over and over again, and I'll say it again. You know, as we get closer and closer, and as we get into the places where we need to be, into power and authority on the grassroots level, you know, the people must increase, the National Liberty Alliance must decrease. We will then only be, and we only are anyway at this point. Well, not true. We're a little more than this at this point. We are really facilitating an education, but we're also helping to organize the people to develop within their states and to unify the grand juries within their states. And ultimately, our goal is to develop grand juries on the county level, but it's really developing the administrations for the juries on the county level. And that's our goal, and to empower those people, to educate those people, and then when they really go through all of the education necessary, then they're totally free to do whatever they want. Until then, we need to stay structured and focused on delivering the necessary skills, the necessary information and education, and also help them, with principles. They have to be principled people, and they have to take a vow to God that they will be principled. They come in with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And so until we get to that point, you know, at that point, it's hands off. The people must rule themselves. And we're creating a system in such a way that no one will be able to subvert it, because the people will have freedom on their own level. And they'll be working together, but they know that they have to take care of the business in their county. and just make sure that there is justice in the court and therefore justice in all the elected positions within that are connected in that county. And that takes you right to Washington, because they every county or certain districts have, of course, the a congressman or a senator and so on. So
one other thing, John, I'm having a wee bit of difficulty wrapping my head around the logistics of, shifting the grand juries into the county courthouses, and then are you going to be eliminating jobs or and the funding? How is that going to carve out?
Well, there is a plan, and there is a process, and there is things inside the structure of our government that makes plan for that, which I'm not going to reveal because, one of the things, we're writing a book, it's going to be a handbook, and before we give those handbooks out, we're also going to have a special course, and before we give those handbooks out and allow people to get into this course, we have quite a few courses. We have the one big course that people can join now, but we've got other things coming up. But there's going to be another course very particularly, specifically, that will really work towards the administrator, and we'll have an administrator's book, and we'll assist them with all of those processes that you spoke about and how it works. But we're not going to give that to anyone that doesn't take the vow. And also, they're going to put themselves into subjection to us for a period of time, which will be sort of a probation period. And when two or three or four people are in a county, they need to then take the rein of that to work together to keep each other honest. They got to do that on their own. And look, that's the way people are. Our founding fathers spoke about religion and virtue and the importance of those things in government. So the extension of those things, as being a Christian, for instance, if you're in a really good Christian community and involved with people and doing Bible studies and all these things, we correct each other. When someone does something wrong, we bring it to their attention. And if they argue against it, you go get another brother and you talk to them people, we take two or three witnesses
Matthew 18, have Matthew 18. Okay, and then time frame wise,
what works out well, we have discovered, and believe me, we thought to take back the nation in the courts, we need to do it from the county level, the grassroots level. We really thought that, and it seemed logical. It made all the sense in the world. But as we have journeyed over two years now, almost 3 years, we've made the journey. We've been through the lower levels. We're into the federal courts. It came to the realization that, we're going to win this on a federal level. You're not going to win it on the county level. But there are 94 federal levels, and when you break that up across our membership, we have a huge number of people in all of those 94 districts, which means we right now are able to easily get four individuals easily in a federal district to work there in the courts and bring in the proper processes and bring back justice into the court. So that's how we're going to accomplish it. Once the federal courts are brought under justice, then you have on the county level, you see the states have no choice because they have the constitutional power and authorities to deal with anything that is concerned with the Constitution. And if they're not obeying the Constitution, the federal court can do something about it and start making arrests and dealing with it. And so we will be able to put the whole structure on the county level back together very quickly. But ultimately, where we have to end up with administrators is in the counties, four for every county. Now let's take a state, for instance, that has New York State, for instance, has four districts because it's a large population. It's done by population within a geographical areas, but we have four federal districts, and we have 62 counties. Okay, and so of the district to those counties, we have about 15 counties in each district, roughly speaking. So when a federal district needs a grand jury, they need to not only be in the federal district, but if the person is accused of a crime or something, then what county did it take place in? Well, what county in that district did that, because that's where the people need to come up to be on that jury or the grand jury. And so that county would be responsible for giving the necessary needs to bring a grand jury together for the federal court. Now, they could do everything on the local level and then deliver them into the federal court. So the federal courts don't really need administrators, is my point. The county administrators will be the administrators. So let's say we have 15 counties, okay, in a federal district. So in theory, so to speak, if you have four administrators in 15 counties, that's 60 administrators. And there's no way any kind of work like that required in a federal court anyway. But the counties could be taking turns or even back each other up and work out some kind of a structure for that. But eventually, people will be seated within their counties in those courts, because that's where we're heading for, and that's where the real power of grassroots is at in the county level.
Okay. And then perhaps a little flow chart on the website just to clarify that. And then okay. And then lastly for me, this gentleman that just called in, I guess from Wisconsin or whatever, so he's had some kind of habeas corpus or whatever going on, and obviously that hasn't been handled. So what's going on with the time frame of a couple of calls ago too? I know there was a lady that had fallen through the cracks. What I would say had fallen through the cracks. So
yeah, a lot of the problems were because of the people we had taking care of this business who had betrayed us. Okay, and they were actually there for their own purpose. The individual that was responsible for this, particularly, when I needed the information from him, it took him 2-3 weeks before he started giving me anything, and everything he gave me had nothing to do with anything we're doing. So we just had a lot of things going on that we thought were being done right, and yet it wasn't. So people who have filed papers and think that they're processed, and we've been banging this drum for quite some time, telling people, you know, that they need to bring in their paperwork all over again. Now, we guessed there were around 100 people, and that was very close, I think. We ended up, most of those people have responded and have resubmitted their paperwork or are in the process of resubmitting their paperwork. Now, I'm sure there's a few that fell between the cracks. Maybe they're not paying attention. Maybe they're not coming to the Monday meetings. Maybe they're not reading the emails. And then, you know, there's nothing else we could do if they fall through the cracks and they think their paperwork's in and it's not. We do have a place where people can go to find out the status of their paperwork. And all they have to do is they go to, let's see if this is on the directory. I think it's on the directory. If you go to directory, highlight directory, and click on track habeas corpus petition. Track habeas corpus petition. Now, you'll come down to a list. And you can either do it by petitioner's case or status. If you click on petitioner's case, case on the top, it'll be alphabetical order, and you'll be able to find your name very, very quickly and then look to the right to see where it's at. There are, I think, 5 or 6 categories that we laid out quickly. There are eight categories. There's intake, there's processing, there's queued, there's served, there's default, there's proof of default, there's resistance, and there's success. So there's 8 different steps that take place in a habeas corpus. And to see where they're at, they should be there. And we are having private meetings once a week for all the people who have filed in habeas corpuses. And so we will, you know, we're keeping them abreast there. So we're getting the information out to people directly that have habeas corpuses in our system, letting them know of that meeting so that they can attend it. And it is a private meeting only for those people. And also, well, if anybody that's not on the list, and they think they're on the list, well, ultimately, you know, they're not paying attention that they need to check. But the status is given from all of these. Now, a lot of cases that have not progressed along often is because they haven't gotten all the information in yet. We need to know who the judge is, what the name of the court is. We need to know all the lawyers. We need their addresses, their phone numbers. We need all this information, and that's on the intake form, and it must be complete. Usually a docket will provide everything that they need. And then we need affidavits. And the affidavits have to be one done without playing around with the language of a man on the land and all those things. We get a lot of problems with that because there's a lot of poison on the Internet. People need to think that they have to say that they're a man on the land in order to get some kind of justice in these courts. And that's not how it works. And that just marks them as someone that they're going to say is psychologically disturbed, and they'll find themselves in prison in the psycho ward being evaluated. And I know of someone down in the city was there for 8 months. Okay. So it's a dangerous game to be the man on the land in a courtroom, I'll tell you right now, because you're a mocked person and that judge is out to get you.
So. And then, so that's good clarification. And then with people like success rate, I mean, what is happening? Are things being successful?
Well, we've had two successes, and we've got about 12 or 14, well, goodness, maybe even more than that, 15 or 16 things going through the process. None of those have gone through all of the process yet. So, you know, there's a step and another step and another step. We didn't have a plan on the length of these steps, but I don't want to give a time period of the length of the steps. But, you know, but there are certain things we wait so many days before we make the next step, and then so many days before we make the next step. And I don't want to necessarily reveal that because the enemy doesn't need to know that. But meanwhile, we're doing other paperwork. We have a very powerful paper going out to the clerks this week. I'll probably read that after it goes out. I don't want to pre-read that particular one. I want it to hit the courts before I talk about that. But it's going to hold every court clerk, that is the chief court clerk, in every federal district, there are 94 of them, personally responsible for doing their job. They took an oath, and they are not to discern a paper on whether it should go through or not, and they should not charge money for justice. That's extortion, and we made that clear on paper, and we showed them how the law says that. It's illegal. You cannot charge for justice, and the only word for that is extortion. If you're not going to let my papers go through without me giving you money, that's like Vinny coming down and saying, hey, I'm going to protect your store windows from being broken, you know? So we're not going to put up with extortion. We're going to hold them liable. But anyway, I think it's a pretty powerful paper, and we will read it. And then we have other papers. You know, we have the paper for the Congress, which was supposed to go out, but it didn't, not yet. It's in the making, okay? But it didn't go out because other things has take precedence to that, and we have to keep up on the things that take precedence. But that paper is going to go in, And I didn't have a problem reading that prematurely because we do want to let these people know. We're giving them the warning. Look at we keep giving them the mercy. We keep giving them the olive branch. But the day's coming. We're also letting them know when the olive branch is no longer going to be available. And when that day comes, people are going to be arrested and they're going to have to be tried. And whatever happens, happens. And we're not going to accept excuses at that point. We've given them plenty of time. We've given them plenty of education. And that's what we're busy doing. And that's what's really, you know, kind of shaking their tree a little bit, rattling their cage, because especially the judges. And by little things we hear, we know it's working. And also, look, they don't tolerate people doing, you know, assaulting them in the way that we're assaulting them by word, but we're assaulting them with the truth. And to anybody who is evil, truth is an assault to them. So they don't like that, and they usually go out after people, and they haven't been able to do that to us, and they will never be able to do that to us, because to do that to us would really endanger them, because then we'd have a court of law, and this would be a big thing, and people would see the truth in the papers and in the news and so on and so forth, and there's too many of us involved for them to suppress what it is exactly we're doing. And we're growing on a daily basis, so we're becoming a bigger and bigger threat. There are other things that I cannot talk about, impressive individuals or situations that we're going to be involved with that's going to put us into a more visible place. And also, if they're successful, you know, we don't know. In other words, that we go through with it. we're on principle. And, you know, if people will offer us money, we don't want the money. They want to give us a donation, that's fine. Don't connect it to something we're going to do, because whatever it is that needs to be done, if it's right, we'll do it. If it's not, we're not going to do it. But, you know, there are things, there's something particularly in the law enforcement area that we're working on, and individual or individuals very powerful who we might be able to have on our side and start to really work together in an investigative mode. It is this and these individuals working with the grand jury for a purpose and a focus and for the purpose of really, you know, enforcing and starting to collect, you know, marshals and sheriffs that would work in order to achieve this solution that we're really working on, which appears, unfortunately, I think, is going to end a lot of people in jail. And they still have the opportunity to prevent that by just doing the right thing in the courts now. And any judge at the point in time or any clerk at the point in time when this is executed, whether it's through this group of people or another group of people, it's going to happen eventually. And when it happens, there's not going to be any more mercy. Mercy is at the end. They'll get mercy from the final concern by the jury that tries them, and whatever mercy they think is necessary, and they would make that judgment by whatever took place in that courtroom, and it's their business.
Well, I'll ring off. Again, I want to thank Gary. Gary, thank you for all your attention and information, and John, thank you. You know, leadership is everything, and so I appreciate your resolution and look forward to the little email and great success.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
I don't think we have anybody else from Washington in the queue. We do have other people, and anybody who wants to get into the queue, I guess, could. And do we have other speakers tonight, Gary?
No, Gary had to leave.
Gary had to leave.
Yep. Okay, do we have any other speakers, Jay?
No.
No? Okay, so we'll continue with the Q&A then. Okay, anybody wants to get into Q&A, star 6, and you're in. Let's go to the next person. And Gerard's not here yet, right? I think something happened. He's got something, emergency or something going on in his life. I don't know, have no clue what it is, but I heard that, but... I haven't been able to reach him all day, so I guess he's out busy taking care of some business. But let's see, someone from Washington. Is it A-L-L-E-N-E? Your mic should be open. Last four digits, 1203. 1203 from Washington.
Aileen.
Aileen?
Okay. Mute.
Aileen just left the queue, so...
Okay.
Maybe they got disconnected. I don't know. Okay, Maud from New York. Go right ahead, Maud.
Okay, John. I just wanted to share some information about Paul.
Okay, yeah, okay. I called you before the program to see if we can get information if there was when the funeral is and anybody that's over there might want to attend.
Exactly.
But go ahead.
So they're having a wake for him. From 2 to 4 and 7 to 9 in West Hampton Beach at 16 Mill Road. And the funeral parlor is called, I'll spell it to you, F-O-L-L-E-P-T, for Bet, or something to that effect. And there's a phone number in some case someone wants to call up and find out anything. That's 283-1231, and that's 631 area code. So that's the way.
What's the area code?
631.
631. So it's 631-283-1231.
That's
and the name of the funeral home is Folipe, F-O-L-L-E-P-T.
Yeah.
And it's 16 Mill Road. What's that, Hamptons or North Hampton?
West Hampton Beach.
West Hampton
Beach.
Beach.
Yeah.
And do you know the zip?
Oh, no. I know.
Okay. So it's 16 Mill Road, West Hampton Beach, Follep, F-O-L-L-E-P-T, Funeral Home, at 631-283-1231. I will do is I'll post that when people hit the silver button out there for coins on our website on the right side, and I'll post the message that Paul has passed and that that this is taking place. Now, they're having tomorrow, is they're having a viewing?
This is on Wednesday.
Okay, Wednesday they're having a viewing. Okay, what time is it again now?
2 to 4 and 7 to 9.
Okay, and when is the funeral?
The funeral is on Thursday. I don't have the hour yet, but it's going to take place in St. Rosalie's Church in Hampton Bays.
Rosalie Church, Hampton Bay. Bay. Okay, give me more information. If you can, get a zip code and a phone number or anything of that nature. We do have, you know, the people can call the funeral parlor and they'll get more information as far as the funeral is concerned. Do we have any idea on time?
No, I didn't get that yet.
Okay, when you get that info, get it to me and I'll get it up on that page and we'll send out a email concerning this to anybody who would like to attend.
Right. I mean, I'm sure he had dealings with some people. I understand they had some very nice relationships with him, and if they're local, I mean, I don't think that people should come from very far if they don't want to, you know, but mm-hmm. if they live in the area, on the island or something like that.
Right. People will decide if they want to go. And we'll, you know, that's their business, and people locally, you know, will probably be more opportune to go. But okay.
All right. Just wanted to let you know about that. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Morty.
Appreciate
it.
Bye bye.
And please tomorrow, if you can, get me whatever new information.
I'm with bells on.
Okay, and I will, and I'll keep an eye out for your call. If you get if you miss me or something, and you get through to Linda, you know, just give her the information. Well, just let her know, and I'll get in touch with you. She'll get to me eventually. Okay.
I can email it to Linda.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, and she'll just pass it on to you.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you, Maud.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
Bye. Okay, William from 254 area. Go right ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, my name is Barbara, and I'm from, I live in
Texas.
Oh,
last name is Williams, I guess. Barbara, okay, go ahead.
Yes, and I'm a new member. I joined in. I've been talking to Laura and to Mr. Jeff, and my biggest concern was my son. That's been locked up since the 9th of November in Broward County there in Florida. And I said I would come online tonight, just talk and see, you know, what you all can do. I was told by a young man by the name of George that you guys were a good organization, that you all kind of believe the same way my son does. And so I'm just really need some help from him.
Okay, yeah, what we could do is a habeas corpus, and if you're interested, in that challenges the jurisdiction, and they cannot defend the jurisdiction, and by law they have to release them. It's a uphill battle. We've had a couple of successes. We've got a lot of cases going through that we got a lot of hope for, but we're not going to give up on any of them, and we will push until they obey the law. And the law will require them to be released, and if they need to be charged, they need to be charged in a common law court. And so they would never do that. But definitely the jurisdiction that anybody is in is a foreign jurisdiction. It's not a true American jurisdiction. It's not the common law. But if you want to get involved, if you want us to help get involved in your case, on the right, go to nationallibertyalliance.org. And on the right-hand side in the column, as you scroll down, you'll see a upside-down happy face. In other words, it's a frowny face. So you'll see a frowny face, a big yellow frowny face, holding up a help sign. And if you click on that, just follow the instructions concerning what kind of case you have, and then fill out the necessary intake form and get the information that's necessary, and get a hold of Linda, you know, through by getting that information in. But also, Once you file there, and we have your phone number and your email, we'll notify you of the time and place of our meetings to keep people informed on habeas corpuses that we're doing every week. So once a week, it's a private meeting. Only people invited are the people who have paper in through us to do a habeas corpus. So follow the instructions and then get connected on the meetings and follow your case through the chart. Again, you'll find it under directory, and you click on track habeas corpus petition, and it'll tell the status of every case we have. And so if anybody who has a case filed with us, and if their name is not here, then you don't have a case filed with us. You were dealing with somebody, either you didn't complete the necessary information to move you into intake, final intake. Well, no, actually, I think the intake is set you up immediately as soon as you sign up. So, you know, yeah. Your name should be here as soon as you start the intake process. Your name should show up on the petitioner's case name. And
okay,
you'll see
well,
all of the cases.
Okay, well, I've been talking with Laura and Mr. Jeff, and they've been so very helpful. They've even kind of set us up with the courtroom observer,
uh-huh.
And so we're kind of moving along, they were given certain information to get, so they were told to give certain information, so that information should be coming in pretty soon. That they did. So we're trying to, they're following up on some things that they were told to do. Because we had talked with someone, but I was told I need to be on these Monday night lines, you know, conference calls to get some more information about what you guys are doing. And from listening to you all talk, you're doing an awesome job. I hear what you're saying. And my son, I heard what you're saying about PAG. My son is a PAG. And I was listening to some of the conversations he's having about some of the things that they shouldn't say in court and some of the things that will get them in trouble and all that stuff. So he's been in different courts. He's been in different courts I'll just have to probably talk to you, you know, one-on-one, because some things I don't want to say because I do believe that my phone is still tapped.
Okay, I appreciate that. All right, well,
yeah.
Look, the key thing, though, is to get into the queue for the process. So click on the frowny face and start filling out the information. Get that part of the process going. And, of course, if you're working with our courtroom observers group, we'll be helping by getting people in the neighborhood to come down and be a witness. You know, going into the PAG, I did want to talk a little more about that. It's a private attorney general. I've been really looking for this kind of information for a very, very long time. And I've heard of people that call themselves PAGs, people who are teaching people to be PAGs, and so on and so forth. But I haven't met a group yet or any place that teaches common law correctly for a PAG to be able to operate under common law correctly. And all of them that I have found so far are dabbling in the fiction of court. They're dealing with the statutory courts, and they're dealing with the existing court, and they can't do that. They need to challenge the jurisdiction and demand to open a court of record, and they need to get the judge to admit that on the record before they go forward. And that is a very difficult thing to get done. They don't want to do it, but there are ways you can press that. So anybody who understands how to do that process and how to force them into that, it can be done, then okay, that's good. But PAGs, I haven't met anyone who doesn't mess around with the fiction, and you can't mix common law and fiction. It's just it's oil and water. You can't do it. So if we do ever find someone who is legitimate that really understands the common law and is really working through the PAG process, and they're willing to work with us to train people to become PAGs, but they're going to have to sell me on a lot before I would permit that to come into the National Liberty Alliance, and I would talk with the leadership and be very careful with this. But if we could find somebody, then we would use them. But they would also have to understand that they have to give their services for free, because we don't charge for anything. We are in America is in a state of emergency, and the last thing we want to do is charge people to become a member of us, or charge people to take a course, or get an education, or get information. Look, we can't do that, so we rely on donations, and that's sufficient. And if we're giving a good service, we'll get enough donations to support us and continue us going. If we're not doing a good service and we're not offering something valid, and people aren't happy with us and they're not being benefited from it, they're not going to support us. So as long as we're around and supported, we're good. And as long as we have the right message, we will be supported. And that has been the case with us. And that would be the same thing with anyone teaching people to be a PAG. We would then probably work a special donation page for the people going in to take that course. But people should be able to get it if they don't have money. That's the key to this whole thing. You can't charge people for knowledge. Knowledge should be given for free because we're trying to save the nation.
John?
Yes.
This is Nathan. Just a footnote on the intake process.
Yeah.
It's really beneficial if everyone who's involved in the intake process gets a free Skype account, because often they're very hard to get a hold of with
exactly.
phone numbers and emails.
Yes.
Okay, so if you're going to do intake, go get a free Skype account. It's very helpful, and it will speed up the process.
All right. I will, you know, I should get that into the written part. Matter of fact, talk to Gary. Ask if Gary if he can have Carl. I don't know if Carl's on now, but if not, maybe he can add that to Carl's workload to make that also as one of the requirements to go through the process to go get a Skype account. Some people can't because maybe they don't have a computer or something and they go to the library to do the computer and so on. I don't know, but that's, you know, they should be able to get it. And definitely it's a good communication tool. And when someone needs to be spoken to and they see that they're online, Linda sees them or someone else, they can click on them and get them and find out the info they need. So it is a good tool. So, by the way, I was just looking. We do have 105 cases in process, in intake. Some of them have moved to different, you know, positions, but they are in the process, at least through the intake. So that's how many, and that's about roughly what we originally thought we had, somewhere just under 100. But we've been getting new people also coming in, so some people who started a while ago did not, and are not in here because they're not paying attention. Sure. All right. Anything else that you wanted to bring up, Nathan? Or that's it? Okay, I guess that's it. Okay, Barbara.
Yes, now, where do I go? The intake. I'm looking now.
On nationallibertyalliance.org. Just scroll down as you're on the right-hand side. Look on the right-hand side, and on the right-hand side, you'll eventually, right under the Bible study, there's a Bible there with Bible studies, and then just two down below that, you'll see a frowny face holding up a help sign.
I got that.
Okay, click on that and follow the instructions throughout. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. All right, thanks for the call, and let me go to the next caller. Let's see, Mr. Black, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Give us your first name and your state, please.
Lance, I'm in Pennsylvania.
How you doing, Lance? Go right ahead.
Good. What is your name? Is it John?
John, yes.
Okay, John, how you doing? Great work you're doing. Well, I guess I got maybe two questions. One of the questions would be, at the common law, are attorneys allowed to speak in court at the common law?
Who?
Attorneys.
Well, you know, anybody can speak in common law court, but if they're going to bring up statutory positions and try to move the court statutorily, it'll be denied because it's not a statutory court. Common law court is common law. It's a court of principle.
Okay, because usually, I guess, you know, from more studying, and the mm-hmm. civics course is really great, too. Cause a lot of times when you're dealing with these attorneys, they try to stay within the statutory round.
Well, they have no choice. They have no choice because if they move out of it, they'll be reported to the bar and they'll lose their license. Look at they really spy on each other. They rat on each other. When the judge is running his courtroom, if a lawyer starts taking a road of common law in his courtroom, the judge is going to call him into his chambers and ream him out. And he's going to let him know in no uncertain terms, you go back into that courtroom and you get back on point. And this is, you know, we're going to run according to what we have learned in bar school, and that's where we're at. And if he doesn't, then he will find him for contempt, report him to the bar, and he'll be removed. And so you're not going to get, we've had habeas corpuses, and look at these lawyers sometimes, they go into cardiac arrest because they know what it means now that they got to deal with their client that put in for a habeas corpus. And the judge will put the pressure, and they put the pressure on the people, and they're trying to get it out, and so on and so forth. We've seen a lot of stuff going on. They really don't like it. They're very concerned. They get very nervous, and they should be, because really, every time they resist, is just more evidence that we need to pile up for their indictment. And we are going to indict, and we have been collecting a lot of information from these people that we're going to use against them at some point in time. Bear in mind, you know, once we move common law, bar lawyers are going to be leaving the bar in droves. Why would they stick to a restricted program when they can take at least what they know about the processes of court, and they can take what they know about how to write papers and do different things and move a court, and take that and just learn the common law? And it's just looking in a different direction. Look at, they know law from what, and they study law in their categories and what they're doing. Common law really is looking into the Constitution, looking into the United States Supreme Court rulings, and looking into the Federalist Papers, and to understand the Constitution better, and the words of our founding fathers, and the scriptures, and also a real court case is all about the facts, and bringing a just conclusion according to the facts, and that's what a real court case is, and what drives a real court case are sworn affidavits. Well, the only thing necessary for a prima facie case is a sworn affidavit. That's it. That drives the court. And no matter what form they write, no matter what knowledge they lack, even if it's just enough to write their affidavit, that opens the court of record, and the judge should be moving it forward. And he shouldn't be a judge. He should be a magistrate and leading it through the process to get it into a common law court, which is a court of our fellow people. You know, it's a court of juries. That's what it is, who are explained to the fundamentals of common law and the principles of honor, justice, and mercy that they have to rule from. And people are very much capable of judging on the facts and appreciating what needs to be done. They're very much capable. Hey, we do business with each other all day long. And, you know, people in my county and people in your county, you know, you do business, you get to know people and so on and so forth. So whatever takes place, the people of the county can deal with it. They're very much capable. They don't need to know, per se, law. They need to know principles and judge the character and judge the facts of the case. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more complex than that.
Well, what I wanted to say was this. A lot of these cases, there's never ever a victim, and they can never prove mens rea or some sort of intent, because all these, even if they deal with their own statutes and codes, it says, you know, knowingly, recklessly, willfully, and mens rea is to prove what's in another man's mind, and no man really is competent enough to say that another was inside of another man's mind. But most of these cases, there's never a victim.
I would say 90, and I don't think this is too high, I would say 90 to 95% of the cases out there easily 95% of the cases fall exactly into that criteria. They don't belong in court at all. It's all making a victim out of people. The state is making people victims, and that's all they're doing, and they're making money off them, and it's all about doing business. And so, maybe about 5% of the cases might belong in court. And all that will disappear when we set up the common law process back in our court system. It'll all disappear. We have really corporation cases is what we have. But we have a city, a town, a state, or whatever, even the federal. They're running under a corporate charter, and they are applying corporatism, you know, the corporate charter, which applies the statutes created for that purpose, you know, and they're applying that in law, in courts. And there are no courts at all. They're the wrong jurisdiction. It's not what we have under the Constitution. It's a fraud. It's injurious. It injures people. And it's just nothing but fraud. So that's what we have going. You know, even the police departments, they work for a corporation. You know, they're not constitutional law enforcers. They enforce the statutes. If they're a town cop, they enforce the statutes within the town criteria. You know, there's state statutes and everything they're applying within there, but basically they're also working with the statutes of the town. The village is the same thing, and the cities are the same thing, and the counties are the same thing, and the state is the same thing, and unfortunately even the federal is the same thing. We are in, everything we're dealing with in courts is under chancery, and they're working in fiction, and it's all fraud. And you know, when we come in with the common law, it really upsets them because it brings them to the remembrance of the fact that they are frauds.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll finish up with the last question I want to ask you, because the judiciary has always said that a legislated act is not law. So, with all that being said, when you're dealing with...
Yeah, they don't care about that, though.
Well, what I'm saying is this, is when you're dealing with codes and ordinances, the legislative act is in law, then, you know, I'm trying to understand how he's forcing these codes, statutes, and ordinances from like a school board or city council, you know, even if the, you know, if the Congress act is not a law, then, you know, you have people harassing like from like code enforcement or like dog licenses with these summary proceedings.
Yeah, so all that is statutes. It's statutory. It won't come into a common law court. Look, people are responsible for themselves, okay? You shouldn't need a driver's license to drive a motor vehicle or a car, whatever you want to call it. You don't need. I understand you need a driver's license to drive a commercial vehicle. It's a lawful thing for them to do and to require certain things about that and create certain rules. I think for sure trucks should be vehicles that are on the road, let's say trucks, they should be monitored to a certain speed and so on and so forth and held to certain requirements. You know, we're under common law, and we're under the law of common sense. And when we come outside that common sense and we injure somebody, there's hell to be paid for that in the common law court. Believe me, you're going to be held to the uttermost farthing on that case. And then people will learn that they need to be careful not to injure someone, because you're responsible if you do. But we don't need statutes. We don't need legislators to tell us about those things. That's common sense. And, you know, the Bible tells us, train up a child on how they should walk, and when they are older, they will not depart from it. That's a promise of God. So if we train up our children on how they should treat other people and how they should act in public and how they should be careful not to injure someone and to do stupid things, then we're going to have a society of people that are focusing in on really concern for people. And that falls under the two principles, you know, that God has put the foundation of all laws. Love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, for the love of God, and love thy neighbor as thyself. No, love thy neighbor as thyself for the love of God. But love your God with all your heart and with all your soul. Love your neighbor as yourself for the love of God. And if we just do the right thing to our neighbor, we train our children to do the right thing. They will not depart from that. If that is the principle we set forth, and really echo out as a people, then that's what will happen, and people will be responsible. Look, I wrote something that I was going to read tonight, and I didn't, but I may take the opportunity to read this right now. And some people might think that some of this is a stretch, but I have thought this out very carefully. And so I'm just going to read this. It shouldn't take any more than 2 or 3 minutes. If the Constitution was adhered to, we would have justice in our courts. We would not be in a constant state of war. We would be more secure. We would not have terrorist problems. We would have less crimes. We would have free energy. We would have cures for many allegedly incurable diseases. Our children would be healthier. We would not have poisons in our food. We would not have poisons in our water. We would not have poisons in our air. We would be more morally minded people. We would bring subverts to justice. We would have real money. One income would comfortably support a family. The family would be secure. We would not have tyrants ruling over us. We would not have political parties. We would not have police brutality. We would not have metal detectors in our schools, metal detectors in our courts, metal detectors in our airports. We would have a natural born American in the White House. We would not have criminal servants. The America our founding fathers envisioned. We would have domestic tranquility, and we would have the blessings of liberty. And finally, if we the people want the Constitution to be adhered to, take a stand and restore the King's Court. And that's what we the people are doing, is restoring the King's Court and putting the King back into our courts so we can have courts of justice again. Now, I can back up everything I said here, and some things might say, well, you know, how is it that, you know, our children would be healthier? How is it we would have free energy? Well, anybody who's been studying and even going through some of our courses, it becomes clear, you know, those things have been suppressed. And our children are being injured ultimately by these inoculations that they're being given, especially as infants. It's repugnant. It's disgusting. It is horrible. It is crime in the highest level for what they're doing to our children and their health. But anyway, we the people can do this.
Well, thanks, John. Again, you know, I appreciate you giving me some enlightenment and the paperwork. As far as the habeas corpuses and all the writs and everything, I read those. As far as how to basically deal with this corrupt system, mm-hmm. I just, like I said, I get on the Tuesday call. I just need to start learning like the process of filing most of this stuff. So it's really good information. That's why I'm here with National Liberty.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, and we appreciate that. So, okay, we'll take our next caller. Fred Johnson from California. How you doing, Fred? Go right ahead. Well, I think for some reason, it looks like Jan.
This is Jan. God is love, New Haven.
Yeah. Hang on a minute, because Fred was supposed to have been unmuted. Let me unmute him, and then when I'm done with Fred, you can talk. But I'm not going to mute you back, so hang in there.
Okay.
And be quiet, okay? Fred, have you been unmuted yet?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Go right ahead, Fred.
How you doing, John?
Good, thank you.
Just checking in. Been on the line listening since you started, and I understand you got some things still happening. I just wanted to see if you had on the top of your head.
We have a little bit of good news on your case in the sense,
yeah.
Which we're going to take all advantage of, and that is we did receive finally a filing paper from the clerk in the federal level, which really puts us into a whole new positioning there that we'll start using to put pressure on. But to get information on your case, you should get to us in the private meeting that we have on a weekly basis. Were you on the first one?
No, I wasn't. When was that held, John?
I can't say over the air, but we'll be calling you. Or you can call if you want. Linda. And if you don't know Linda's number, if anybody out there doesn't know Linda's number, you can just, she's on really on Skype, and everybody that has a case going should have Skype and have her on it. But in any event, you can call me, and my calls roll over into Linda, so you can get her there, and she can give you the details. If I pick up the phone, I'll give you the details on when and where and what time. But I don't want to do that because I don't want people coming to this meeting that don't have a case.
Okay. So I can make that call on tomorrow, right?
Make that call, tomorrow morning or tomorrow early afternoon to find out the information. And we are meeting with all the people that have cases on a weekly, every week, once a week. We're meeting just for updates and answering any questions.
That'll be fine, John. Are you well?
Yeah, I'm doing good, thank you.
All right, good. Well, blessings.
Maybe picking up a little cold, you know. I think there's a virus running around, and I got a little sniffle, but I don't know that
you
I'm
gotta
sick.
You got to come out here to California and get some of our fresh, wonderful 80-degree weather. 80-degree weather in the middle of December. All right, John. I'll be in touch.
Well, listen, it's really good news that we have this paper from the clerk, because it really puts that judge in a whole different light now. We're going to deal with him from a different perspective.
And
again, we have a paper that's going out, which we will discuss a little more intimately than we have tonight concerning the clerks and what we're doing there, which will be a really good leverage for us. And also, it's a shot across the bow of the judges, the chief judges. So,
let me give you a little bit of good news too. Also, Scott, who I told you had a veiled threat in the visit, was concerned. A major concern was his being transferred, and he's in transit as we speak. So he's in a good place, and he's happy about it. He's going to go from Treasure Island to Atwater. And mm-hmm. so he's happy about that. So
is that closer to home or no?
It's closer to his kids. That was mm-hmm. what he was concerned about. He's got a daughter. He's got two children that just had two children he hasn't seen in 7 years. And, it's hard to make people understand it. There's little benefits that seem so big. They're very big.
Well, let me tell you, our founding fathers, when they put things together, let's take the judicial system. When they put it together, they were very concerned about people having to travel too far in order to get to a court. They wanted justice for all. And back in those days, I think it was accepted, a one-day or a two-day journey was an acceptable journey to get to a court. We had to be reasonable also, if they're in a wilderness, it's a whole different story. But that was some of the thinking. Look, the county jail has been created, and the sheriff runs that county jail. If someone is incarcerated, they should be incarcerated in their own county where they live, so their children and their families can visit them. It is a crime to prevent these people from seeing their family.
I understand that.
Also, one of the things I'd like to go after really hardcore, and it's very easy to get the information. Maybe we'll get some researchers going on this and start collecting and maybe even start moving early on this, or at least be prepared to move on this. You know, these people that are in prison, they really rake them through the coals. Really, they're raking the families through the coals by requiring an unbelievable amount of money to make a phone call and to get into the prison. It's so restricted. Phone calls are free. Okay, why don't we have free phones with these inmates and during certain times we go use the phones to call and talk to their family? I mean, if there's a long line or something, maybe they had to be held back 5 minutes and they get back on the line again.
Would you like to know the answer to that, John? I could tell you the answer to that. When the phone systems were put in and you could only make collect calls to your household, the owners of those phones, and those it's changed somewhat, but the owners of those phones were the guards' unions. So the guards another source of income for their payroll was off the backs of poor people who wanted to be in communication with their inmate families. Yeah. So, I mean, there's always a back door to figure out.
There's definitely a trail there. There's a paper trail there. If they're listening, know this. We're coming out after you eventually. Not now, but later on. We're going to go after these people. They're going to be held. This is a crime.
I want to be alive to see that. So many of my dear departed friends have fought. My mentor left in his 90s, and he fought to the day he died. And I told you about Aaron Schiff and so on. Nevertheless, I'm glad things are good for you. I'll be on the call tomorrow, and we'll go where we have to go. Okay? God bless you.
Yes,
have a
you
good
too.
Night. We'll
Thank
talk
you.
To you again soon. Good night, John.
Bye-bye. Okay, Jan, go right ahead. You're going to be unmuted still, Fred, for a while, so try to keep it silent until I push the button after Jan, because somehow something went astray here. JP, go ahead.
Hello. You want to share the time that gentleman can get into that?
No.
Okay, all right, gotcha.
No time, no place, no date,
nothing.
Want nothing but the people on that call that belong
gotcha.
To
okay.
And we'll do the best to monitor the people coming in. And I think what we're going to do is let people know at some point we're going to lock the room because we can't watch the room constantly, especially when we start to get a lot of people in. The only people that belong there are people that have cases.
Okay. Last week you mentioned, Jan mentioned, the concern about December 7th being the D-Day and changing the mailing out. How did that mailing go out?
God changed the date, so.
Okay, so the dates have been changed.
Other things have happened, and we didn't get the paper out yet. We're working on getting another paper out first, which is going to the clerks, and then that one's going to piggyback after that one. And then the sheriff we're going to push for sometime in January, and we're working diligently on all of the addresses for the sheriffs. If you were listening on earlier, I believe it was said there was really one state that we really have a lot of work to do on the sheriffs, but we're pretty close there, I think. If JP's in here and someone wants to unmute him, for him to give us an update on that, that would be good. So, Jan, if you can look around to see if JP's in the room unmute him if he wants to give us a little bit of an update. But anyway, we're working on that. But the date on that paper will be probably next week. We're going to try to get this paper out before this week is out, and then we'll work for the next paper. And, you know, there's a lot of the secondary paper is going to cost us quite a bit of money, probably about $2,000, $1,500. I don't know. We have 440 congressmen, 100 senators, and 50 governors. So we need to get all that out. It's going to be a lot of paperwork. And you got to double that, well, not double it, but also add the 94 courts because we have to file them in the courts. So we have 94 filings, and we have 540 plus 50, so almost 600 servings. We have to serve almost 600 people and file in 94 courts. So that costs money, and like I said, a couple of grand probably for that. So anybody that can donate a little extra this month, or someone who's never donated before, we can use money for that. And these papers are so important, especially it's important to the people who have habeas corpuses, because it gives us leverage and it puts them on notice, and it lays out their crime, and we also are demanding certain things. And we'll read that paper once we get it out.
So then, John, those people, those judges that got the contempt of court, this paperwork that you're doing now is a follow-up on that contempt of court?
Well, no, that paperwork is more of a primer. The judges, we haven't gone beyond the contempt of court with opportunity to amend. So they're told that they're in contempt of court, but they have to have the opportunity to amend their error. We'll accept it as an error and say, hey, fix it, and we're all good. That has to go through a certain part of time, and some cases are already ripe for that time, but you know, before we move to the next step, which is contempt of court and then indictment, before we move to those two stages, there are a couple of papers we want to get out. This one that we wanted to get out on the 7th, we want to get that out, which will go out next week. There's also the paper that we just wrote that is taking precedence over that paper because it's more of a primer for the judges and for the clerks. It's being directed to the clerks, but when we read it, you're going to see the warning that's in there and the attention of the judges, and we did it purposely for two reasons. Number one, to let the clerk know what the situation is really all about and what we know that's really going on there, the subversion against the United States of America by the judiciary. We know that that's what's happening, and that indictments will be coming. Right now they're getting the grace. And, you know, don't be intimidated by a judge, because if you're going to live under that intimidation, or you're going to try to give an excuse, this is what I was ordered, it didn't work in Nuremberg, and it's not going to work in the United States of America. That will not be an excuse we will accept. We've
John,
given them way, way too much information and knowledge to know what their power and what their authority is and what they can do. And we've also opened our doors. You got a problem, come talk to us, and we'll help you. You know, even the clerks. We'll deal with the judge for you. We'll go after him. But
John,
go ahead. Yeah. JP?
Yep.
Go ahead. I don't know. I guess we lost. Did someone hit the next question? Because we lost JP, the other JP, and we lost.
No, I'm here.
JP for you.
Okay. Because he's not here no more. But go ahead, JP.
Here.
Oh, okay. No, I do. Okay, I'm sorry. I do see JP.
Yeah,
go
John,
ahead.
I didn't hear the question. You had a question.
How are we doing with the sheriffs? I heard that we have one state that still has a lot of work to be done. But generally speaking, we have all the addresses for most of the sheriffs at this point, or no?
We have 100% of all the addresses.
For all of the county sheriffs?
For all of them.
Okay. Well, that's good news then. That's good news.
So I'm still looking for some actual sheriffs with their address, with their fax numbers, but all the addresses are done.
Okay, can you give me that final list, drop it in my Skype when you get a chance, maybe tomorrow morning or something, or tonight?
You mean the actual list? Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, the list, yeah.
I think actually I dropped it in New Skype about last week, I think.
Yeah, I have one, maybe, I think it was longer than a week, but I want to make sure that this is the final, and when I get it, whatever I got, I'll destroy, and I'm going to use this one. So.
Yeah, so after the changes that were made by, I guess, you, John, and Linda, as far as the strategy of your federal first judge and first clerks, the list has been reduced. I removed three lines, the clerk of courts, the clerk of the county, and the mayors were removed.
Right, yeah, we don't need that because we'll never be able to get down to that level. It's just way too many people to communicate with.
So I just wanted to say to the people tonight that we are just missing 49, files. It's not that much, and we are still missing a few fax numbers. Tennessee, I think I have somebody working on it. So
okay.
I might have some results. Rhode Island is finished. Maryland is finished. Maine is finished. Michigan is finished, thanks to Gary, actually. And I got the New York is finished. Nevada, I'm still missing some state representatives. But the situation is much, much better than it used to be.
I see
a lot of green on that. By the way, the page has been updated early on in the show. So Cal updated it. The show was I just started when he updated that file, so it's available on the website. And I want again to mention that you have to highlight directory, and then select the file summary for the elected official, and then you will have the graph that is showing what is missing or not.
All right. Well, what people want to do is anybody who wants to help to collect this information, the best I could tell you by looking at the directory page, which we have to repair, get a hold of Robert or Jan, they're the national coordinators, or even Gary, and call them up and get connected with the IRC, Nathan, which you're working with Nathan, I presume, JP, for people to help correct, get
yes.
to gather this information. So get a hold of Nathan, who will then work you in and connect you with JP to see what it is that we need and what you could be working on. Jan, maybe you can make a note to Gary. I don't know what happened to – I haven't looked at our directory page in a while, but we used to have a lot more information out there and breakdown of all of the people, and I don't see it anymore. I'd like to see this page get back to where it belongs. We should have the list of all the committee leaders here. We should have a lot more information here, and it's not here.
That was duplicated, John, so it's now under the committee list instead of being.
No, but I told Gary maintain the redundancy here because people should be able to find it through logic. And if you click on directory, logically speaking, you should be able to find everybody. People may not know enough to click on committees and then click on an individual to get to. Their names and every information should be here, name and contact. So tell Gary when you get a chance to make sure he puts that connection in here also.
Okay.
Everybody should be in the directory. Anybody that has a phone number for a purpose of contact because they're in a leadership role, their name and the name of whatever it is that they're doing and their phone number should be here as well as in their committees, okay?
Yep.
All right, thanks. All right. Anything else, JP?
Yeah, John.
Go ahead. No, we'll deal with you first, JP. Go ahead. Not
okay.
Jan, JP.
I have to receive some instruction because we got a lot of people mainly into the representatives and the state senate that absolutely do not have facts. And so I am wondering if I should compile a list that you can use as a database for email only.
We have email addresses on them?
Yep.
Okay.
We have 100%. I shouldn't say that. We have one state where I cannot get the emails, so I don't have no fax, no emails, but the rest is all emails.
How is their physical addresses? Are they pretty good and accurate? Are we complete?
They're accurate and live.
Okay, so they're complete.
Complete.
So we have the U.S. Congress, we have the U.S. Senate, we have their actual physical addresses, which I presume is a Washington address, or do we have actually their state address?
No, we have district address also.
Oh, that's very good news. Okay, look, you and I should talk when we get a chance, hopefully tomorrow, and I need to go through that list a little more to know where we're at with these things and make sure I understand it, because we're getting ready, of course, as you know. Our next step is to go into the legislators. Now, also, as far as the court clerks' addresses and information, also with the chief court clerks, and also the chief judges, I know we had someone double check the information on that level through Linda. She may have communicated that with you. I don't know.
It happened live, and I was part of the discussion. And you had instantly corrected the three entries on the chief clerk's spreadsheet.
Right, so there are three or four corrections. Correct.
I do have both documents, and they are 100%.
Okay. All right, well, let me get that list into Skype as soon as you can. It's all in one. You have them on sheets on one, or do you have it broken up in a couple of different, files?
Well, the sheriff is a master file, which means that you have each state and a master.
Okay, send me what you have particularly on what I'm looking for, but send me what you have on Skype, okay?
I will.
Okay. And then I'll probably call you eventually during the week to confirm my understanding of what I've got, all right?
Very good. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, JP. Appreciate it. Okay, back to you, Jan.
Yes, my particular judge got two contempt of court notices. And then we were going to do something, and then what came up is the 94-some court mailings went out. And what the federal court, I filed at the federal court because it went to the wrong address. So I was sent file.
We've had a few situations with a few people where the wrong addresses we had, and they need to come back to us to let us know, and we need to send them out an original with a seal. So we should know that. You should get back to Linda on that, and then we'll resend what we have to send to that person with a seal.
So mention to Linda, because what went out was the writ of mandamus, order to show cause, and writ centurae. And that was filed with the wrong address. I took it to the federal court, and I had it filed. And
Did you get a stamped
file? It got stamped, and I sent a PDF file to Linda, and she put it in the file that, and the clerk there says, you know, don't send any more. We've got this. It's filed. So Linda stated that we're not going to send it to the correct address, that this is okay, I guess, is my understanding.
Well, as long as we have the filing received, then that's good.
So it doesn't need to be resent to the correct address.
If we've got it that it's filed, no. If we have the front page stamped file, that's fine.
But they're treating it like correspondence is
what
they say.
Well, it doesn't matter to me. No, that doesn't matter. Look, at, we're going to treat them as criminals, as they want to treat it with correspondence. Look, at, you know, long, long time ago, I've seen a court case, and I also heard it in court. You're going to walk into this court, you're expected to know the law and to know the rules of the court. I've been told that by a federal judge. And that's okay. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Let me tell you something. We're in a common law court. You took an oath, and you to operate under common law court, and you're expected to know the rules and the law. So there's no excuses, okay? So they can treat it as correspondence. Their treating as correspondence is really what they're doing, is they're covering up the concealing the paperwork. Is what, that's what that is, and that's a crime. And because of they are who they are, and they claim to be educated, and they claim to be judges, well, then they should understand, and it's tough. They will find themselves at the end of an indictment at some point in time. And it's sad to say, I have a feeling we're going to be indicting a lot of judges at some point in time. It's going to be really overloading the system, but if that's what has to happen, then that's what's going to happen. But I have a feeling the feds are going to bend and break. It's going to be on the state level where it's going to get sick, because these people don't know anything else but to throw their can into the can, and then they can think about what they're doing.
So this writ of certiorari is at the federal level, and it's not at the state level, correct?
Yeah, this is a constitutional issue. It must be at a federal level.
So then what's going to hammer the next spot to get this writ of certiorari going?
Look at these things here, these kind of things we should be discussing at the meetings, okay?
Gotcha.
Because we don't want to spend too much time on
gotcha.
Specific court cases and so on and so forth. But remember, I've said it from day one, and everybody knows it's an uphill battle. Things are going to take time. You know, good things come to people who wait, and patience is a virtue, and testing of our patience is constant. And, you know, Christian is always tested, always tested. You know, why didn't this happen? Well, because you're being tested, you know. Look, the testing is for you. It's not for God, because he already knows the end results of your soul and so on and so forth. But the testing is for us and for our growth and to develop the virtues that God wants us to have. So we have to have that virtue of patience. And we have to understand the power and the might of the pen, okay? Nothing is more powerful than the pen. And we've heard that said, and people may not understand that. But the power of the pen survives, and when you put the truth on paper and you put it in places where it can't be erased, and there's darkness, and now you have a piece of light, light will always eventually overtake all the darkness. And the crime will be revealed, and eventually, as long as you're persistent and continue, and that's what we're doing, justice will prevail. We have to trust that.
So in order for those indictments to actually work, the marshals and the sheriffs have to be on board.
Not all.
Understanding.
No, not all of them. Look, it's going to be, for them, just like the people, it's going to be a landslide. When enough of the people are there where the pressure is so great and it pushes through, it'll be the same way. We only need a handful of those people to respond, and the rest will follow behind. Because the law and the truth and of what's going on will start to then, at that point, explode. And believe me, remember this, we've been priming them for a long time now, and they continue to get primed, so they can't plead ignorance. And, you know, for the percentage of them that aren't paying attention at all, well, woe is them. They're going to have to pay the price if they don't get on board at that time. The ones that are paying attention and trying to figure things out, maybe they're confused, maybe they don't believe, and fine, when the time comes and it happens, they'll know what to do. They'll have to do the right thing. But I'm not worried too much about that. We just have to, again, just get back to the simplicity of what we're doing. We can't figure out the complexity of how it works, but we can figure out the simplicity of what we're doing. And the simplicity is a very simple thing. Whatever it is that any of us are doing, just do the right thing. And we're putting the truth on paper, and we're applying it to where it belongs. And now it's up to the king of the court to make it work. Okay? That's not our job.
So the bottom line is patience.
It's a virtue.
Because there's we'll talk later on the indictments and the sheriff's support of the constitutional common law sheriff is very important with NLA and other organizations to help that man make it through the corrupt field.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if there's no support for that man, that corruption will squeeze him.
I'm not sure what you're saying. Maybe say this in another way.
The constitutional common law sheriff, it'll be the one that will respect the grand jury, the common law grand jury.
Right. What needs to get through to them? Look, here's the position of the court. The position of the court is there are statutes in order to pull together a grand jury, and we're not falling into that requirement. But those statutes have nothing to do with common law. The very first grand jury pulled together came from the people themselves. They called for the grand jury. They collected the grand jury. They executed the process. That was the very first grand jury. And history recalls the process of calling the grand jury can be done by the people themselves. It could be done by the sheriff. It could be done by the coroner. It could be done by the magistrate. It could be done by a judge. So all of those people have the authority and the right to call the grand jury. All the people in the United States have the right to be able to go to their county court and say, I'd like to talk with the grand jury. And they don't need to be hearing, well, what do you want to talk with them about? No, their name should be put onto a list, and they should look down and say, okay, you know, we got you scheduled in for Thursday, the 28th of June, and, you know, maybe a month or two away. I don't know. It depends on how busy they are. But, you know, they'll be scheduled in, and they'll have their opportunity to come down. How much time do you think you'll need to talk with them? Or I think I can get out what I need to get out in 10 minutes or 15 minutes. Okay, we'll give you 15 or 20 minutes. Try to stay within the time period and go talk to them. We have a right to have access to our grand jury, and that person come in and say, hey, look, you know, this is what I know what's going on, and I think there's an injustice, and here's the proof. Everybody can do that. Everybody. And they can consider to investigate further or even offer that information if it's valid and in a good documentary form, then they can actually do an indictment right then and there. That's their decision what they want to do with it. So the grand jury is not to be owned by them. Look at We know, and we're going to put this on paper soon, in the next paper going to the judges. We know, okay, they will not permit any habeas corpus to go through. And it's just not going to happen. Because the habeas corpus is all about challenging the jurisdiction. Do you think they're going to approve that? Do you think any judge in his right mind that is a criminal, part of the process, is going to approve the hearing of a habeas corpus that their courtroom might be out of the jurisdiction? Okay, so they're not going to approve that. But we know from their, their questionnaires. I mean, they ask them in a federal level. I mean, I'm blown away. They ask them what TV programs they watch. They ask them if they're a Republican or Democrat. They ask them if they watch Fox News or CNN. You tell me the purpose of that. I already know the purpose of that. Anybody in their right mind knows the purpose of that. Okay, they set the juries up as a psychological game in order to get the outcome they want, whether it is a grand jury or a trial jury, and that's a crime. They cannot, you cannot give the hen house to be watched over and controlled by the fox. You just can't do it. And now there is statutory provisions for the judge or for the magistrate to call for the grand jury. But they need to call the administrators of the grand jury so they will prepare and bring them forward to hear whatever it is that they want to be heard of. And that's the process, and that's the only way we're going to find justice. Anything less than that is wrong. The people need to control that. And if they don't, then the fox will, and we'll just get what we got now, injustice and just horror. All right, I got to move on.
Thank you. We'll see you at the next meeting. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, next caller is Gene, VoIP dialer.
Yeah, can you hear me, John?
Yes, first name and state.
Okay, Gene from Wisconsin.
How you doing, Gene?
And first, I'd like to thank you and all the hardworking members at NLA. And I will be sending another donation next month, and hope other people do too.
Appreciate it.
I have a question. On the NLA website, there used to be in the right-hand column recent comments. Has that been removed or something, or is that just my computer?
No, not to my knowledge. Let me take a quick look. I'm out there right now. Who's online is out there. Let's see, upcoming events. Looking down, I think it's all the way down at the bottom, recent comments. You know what? I don't see it. I don't know why I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
Jen, can you take note of that and bring it up to Gary for... unless, Carl's on the line right now and is hearing us, then that's fine. For this to be, make sure we get that back in there. That was a very convenient thing out there because you can skim through to see the latest comments and decide on which ones you want to go read.
So, right, yeah, and I'd ask a question last week on that. It's the first time I had used that that part of the site, but was kind of looking forward to an answer back. And I appreciate you taking a look at that and seeing if you can find that.
Yeah, we'll get it right back up there. Please, Jen, make sure that that happens. Gary's got the access to take care of that, I believe,
right,
directly, or you can send it over to Carl.
Right.
Okay.
Another quick question I had. God forbid, what would happen to NLA if Obama or one of the other alphabet outfits or whatever would shut down the internet?
Well, that's an interesting thing. Look, they're not going to get away with shutting down the internet until they're actually ready to close the Iron Fist, okay? And that's where they need to be, and they'd love to shut it down. They'd love to be selective and start shutting the selective things. And they do things out here that is criminal. And some of the other things, I wish more people would volunteer so we can get a lot more research going. I'd like to research all the spying that the government is doing and really bring together a lot of information and together to write a paper.
I noticed stuff on the right side is missing.
Yeah, it's a little missing there. But something and information out concerning that, or actually, put them on, NSA or Homeland Security. Let's put them into a court of record. Let's ask them some questions and require them to give us some answers. Are they spying on the people? Let's get that on an affidavit to tell us that they're not doing that. Are they reading our email? Are they collecting all this information so that when someone becomes a person of interest, that they now have all this information on that person? Look at Homeland Security is an abomination to liberty. Homeland Security there is no constitutional authority for Homeland Security, none whatsoever. I think we bring that up in our paper to the Congress. I'm not sure if we didn't. I should add it in there about that thing with Homeland Security. We have sheriffs, and we do understand on the federal level that they need an investigative body. We have marshals, okay. Maybe marshals need to really get more marshals involved, and they should be the investigative thing. But there is the FBI. There really is no authority per se that I'm aware of that gives a being for the FBI. But I wouldn't say that it's a bad organization. Maybe the FBI needs to be under the control of the U.S. Marshal, and that will make it a legal entity, and that, because then they're an investigative group that is necessary on the federal level, the FBI. And the FBI used to be the friend of the people. There is a big battle that's been going on between the FBI and the CIA for decades. And unfortunately, the FBI lost, and they've been neutered, so to speak. And then Homeland Security came in, and that brings everything collectively. They want all these people to communicate, and really what they want to do is have control over everyone. And they do. And so we do have, I'm sure, a lot of good FBI agents out there, but we have a lot of crooks out there, too, people who are, fed all the stupidity stuff, and they believe it. But in any event, I'm sure we still have some FBI guys out there. As a matter of fact, I know we do, that are concerned, and we still have some some marshals and on a federal level. So, hey, you know, they'll come up when the time comes anyway.
Yeah, there's got to be some good guys there somewhere.
Yeah. Look, there are a lot of people on all levels sick of this whole thing, and they themselves can't do anything, and they're frustrated. When they become aware of us and what we're doing, and when the chain is finally pulled and we start flushing the toilet, they're going to all jump on board on this. And it's going to be a landslide, I believe.
Yeah, me too. Okay, John, God bless you, and I yield.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next caller. Let's see, it's area code 860. You should have heard. You're unmuted. 860. Yep, 860. I heard something there, crackling or something, phone.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you. What's your first name and your state?
Hi, this is Jamie from Connecticut.
How you doing, Jamie?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good.
I'm new here in October, and I am taking the civics course, and I was doing some researching for the states. I'm a premier member, and I just had a couple questions. I was wondering if the CPS still has their calls on Sunday night.
Well, the people with the CPS, I am so sad to say, betrayed us, and they went a different direction. They got involved with other people. They were doing different things, and they just it was really a rift. Now, most of the people that have filed papers with CPS for CPS problems did come over to our side and continue to file here, and some people went a different direction, and they're at liberty to do that. But it was they were dishonorable to do what they did. And again, I can only tell you that it was a power play, same thing that has happened on a state level three different times over the past few years we've been together, where people can't come in with impure agendas and really was in here to rob our membership, to either make money or to get a power play going, ego and those kind of things. And it's pretty sad, but it is what it is.
Well, I'm going to be looking to maybe reorganize something in the future.
Well, we're just doing it, bringing CPS right into the same thing with all the other cases, and they also are going to be, notified of the date, time, and place that we'll be meeting for people concerned with their cases in question. But it'll be strictly focusing in on cases. We do, I believe, have one or two people that have psychology backgrounds, as long as they got their feet on the ground, because a lot of psychiatrists, I think, are nuts. But in any event, you do get good psychiatrists out there, psychologists. But we do, I've been told that we have a few good people out there, and maybe we'll get something going where, those are the people that would be able to give some good counseling to people who are distraught and hurt and want to, talk and that kind of thing. But we want it controlled, to reality and to things that will really assist the people, and not for someone to, abuse this kind of thing and really end up hurting people, But we're working on it. We are working on something like that on more of a local level. As time goes on, we're going to be working on that, where there'll be some kind of counseling. The family court is an abomination to liberty. It just is an abomination. There should be no such thing as family court. Look, you got a problem, take it through due process. You need to make someone do something because they're hurting or injuring someone. You take it through the process. You get it to the administrators, who will work on trying to counsel them and to prepare them and get them someplace where they can work on their problems. If they refuse to do that, they can send it into the grand jury, who can also, ask and try to get them to really take care of their problems, so maybe a child isn't injured in some way or whatever. And if they fail to do that, then they send it into the jury, and then the jury is going to tell them what they're going to do. But at least it'll be a jury of their peers, that has compassion, consideration, realization this is a family. We're not to destroy families. We're to help families and to build them up. And if it gets to a point where you have to take a child out of an environment, if that's what really has to happen, you find someone else in the family to take it, to take that child. You don't pass that off to strangers. You have the family deal with it. You bring them in to assist that family that has, is confused in some way and hurting their children or whatever the case may be. I don't know. But yeah, certainly bringing them into a family court where some Nazi judge gets up there and just destroys the family, and these put everybody gets a lawyer and they're talking legalese, and the father
yeah,
is a criminal and goes
that,
to jail.
When they come to your house, you know, when they come to your house, they're already doing illegal things. It doesn't
absolutely. They don't have the authority. They don't have. They're going to come to your house. It's got to be the sheriff with a sworn affidavit and a court order, and it has to have a purpose. And if it's for a family, it's a special situation that has to be considered because this is a family matter. And it, you know, look at that child deserves the mother, and the child deserves the father. And the people, you know, we as a people don't need to be coming in between that. And the family needs to help the family. They have an extended family. And also, and we need to help to work that out if possible. And usually it is. And if we the people have to get involved, then it's got to go through due process. It's got to be serious. There's got to be affidavits. People got to swear to the concern, and you know. And if that's not there, then you can't just go in and destroy families.
Yeah, maybe once we get the country back in order, people won't be so stressed, and you know.
Oh yeah, well look,
get better for the family.
It's all about education. You know, we the people cannot stop at the courts. We have to continue to push towards education. Right now, we have central education, centralized control. You know, people may think they have control to some degree, but look at they can only pick from certain, you know, curriculums and that's government approved, quote unquote, and. And a lot of that stuff is destructive to begin with. But look, yeah. We need to get into the schools to bring morality into our schools, to train up a child on how they should walk, to respect individuals and people. We need to get them into civics and to understand common law. We need to understand the true political process. And this is something every American should learn. It's education. And they need to learn this in school, in grammar school. And every child that comes out of school, that graduates through school, should have a sense of responsibility and a concern for their fellow neighbor, and also a sense of civil duties, and to respond to the grand jury. And we're not going to waste their time, or the trial jury, and the importance of that in order for us to have a nation, and to also know the principles they need to hold. And it's all about morals. You know, earlier on we read what George Washington had to say about morality, and Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, Samuel Adams, they all had a lot to say about this. Only a religious and a morally minded people, this government was created for that alone, can have the Constitution and survive it. And that's the big test.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to be a member, and I'm trying to really help you guys out and everything. And I just had one more question. You know, I'm from Connecticut, and I know that we don't have any sheriffs over here, and I didn't know how that was working out with this process. If you had any information for me, or if there's somewhere I can look up information about that.
Right. Yeah, if there is no sheriff, there is no common law, there is no common law court, there is no constitutional law enforcer, and that's a problem, and that needs to be corrected. We have the same similar problem here in New York. We have 7 counties without a sheriff, 7 counties, and I'm sure they're working on others. That's one of our first battles when we get into a better position. Clearly, when we get into the courts, we're going to approach it very quickly and hardcore. You can't have a common law. You can't enforce the Constitution if there's no constitutional law enforcement agent in that county. It's just cannot happen. Look at they have what I think they call the marshals out there, and the question becomes is they're political. They answer to the governor, I believe. I mean, look at that means they're politically driven, politically controlled, and they're statutorily controlled. They're really not law enforcement. They are code enforcement, and there can be no common law court if there is no sheriff. It just doesn't exist. You know, sheriff plays an important role, and has been so very early on.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, and I'm going to try to keep helping you guys out however I can.
Appreciate it, and we will be dealing with Connecticut's problem as soon as we can. We're not in a position at the moment, but it is in our scope, and we do know what we need to do and say to do what has to be done.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. And that will be dealt on a federal level, by the way. It's a violation of every person in Connecticut's unalienable rights by not having a constitutional officer to protect them.
About 10 minutes left.
All right, thank you very much for your time.
Thank
you. I'll let somebody else.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to try to go. Bye-bye. We're going to try to go through the callers a little quicker, and hopefully next week if people have something long, they can bring it up. I'll try to get them in the beginning next week. But let's try to get through whoever we can. Mark from Florida, go right ahead. Mark from Florida, you've been unmuted. Go right ahead.
Yes,
go right ahead, Mark.
Thank you. I don't have anything as urgent as everybody else on here, but my question is I had the city of Orlando come up and issue me a citation on my swimming pool being too dirty. Even though I'm on an acre and a half, they can't. Yeah, I know. And I'm on an acre and a half, and you can't see it from anywhere.
Yeah, wouldn't they come in with the helicopters? You know, they love to fly over my house. I don't know. In the summertime, I go out into my yard. I have a pool, and every time I'm out there, I see the helicopters come by. You know, two or three of them sometimes, and they seem to always fly over my house. But I guess I'm just on their route of, going around looking for whatever they're looking for up there. I don't know, but that may be how they got it. You know, your pool is dirty.
Well,
huh?
I don't use a pool. You know, I never get in it. It costs me $100.
Well, I think you should. You know, you'll be a troublemaker, and you could run yourself into trouble. And if you tried to sue them, but if you did, I mean, how is it that they know? Did they violate your unalienable right?
It was an anonymous call came in. Somebody didn't like me or something. I reported it, and the guy's got to. I got an acre and a half, so he had to come onto my property. I have a no trespassing sign.
Right. Yeah. They trespass on your property. They violated your
Fourth
right
Amendment.
Of privacy, right there. You know.
Okay.
It's silly. We have a lot of problems like this. I mean, all these stupid, silly things, codes that they're applying towards the people and just raking us through the coals and just emptying out our pocketbooks in their courts. It's sickening.
I know. So what would I go out after them for on
Yeah,
this,
I wouldn't waste my time. I'd make somewhat of an argument about it, but I wouldn't waste too much time on it. It's difficult to deal with, but look at work with the National Liberty Alliance. Let's get to the common law and stop all that nonsense altogether.
Well, no, I'll file a common law lawsuit on them. I mean, you know.
If you understand how to do it and you think you can fight through the process and keep on top of things, then yeah. And that's what
okay.
you could do.
Now, on the same subject, though, also, none of them had a surety bond on them.
Right. Look at it. In New York, we have the same problem. None of our judges have a bond, I couldn't believe they told me this. I called down and spoke with the offices of the chief judges down in New York City here. They're the chief administrative judges, which control all the judges. They're supposed to make sure the law is applied to. And I asked them where the oaths and the bonds were, and they told me that they keep all the bonds, the oaths down there, and they're available on request. It took me a while to get through to this. And I said, well, what about the bonds? They said, well, you know, the controller takes care of that. I said, what do you mean the controller takes care of that? Well, they fund the problems through the controller. I said, so the people are paying? You know, they didn't have an answer for that. They're putting that whole burden right back onto the people. It's on the judges. I don't think anybody wants to insure the judges, so it's difficult or expensive for them to get a bond. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Well, on the employees, I mean, I'm looking at the report here from Florida, and it says, no such officer shall be qualified to hold office or perform their duties thereof until such surety bond has been filed,
right. but they don't follow the
bond.
Laws. No, they don't follow. They don't follow the law.
Unbelievable. Okay,
it's a private club, and they're doing what they want. We have corporatism in place. This is all corporations and favoritism and all kinds of junk going on. Has nothing to do with the law, and they don't apply it to themselves.
All right. So you can enlighten me on where when it would come to trespassing on my prop where they can't do that. You wouldn't know any case law or anything on that offhand.
Well, yeah, the Constitution. What is it, the Fifth Amendment? Let's see.
Yeah, it would be would be the Fourth Amendment, unreasonable search and seizure. But, you know, every once in a while,
nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use, and so on. So look at, if they want to go do something about your property, they have to go through due process, and there is no due process for them to come onto your property that I can think of, unless they can think and claim and get an affidavit from someone that some law breaking is going on, you know.
Okay, got it. All right. Well, that pretty well answers it, I guess. Okay, thank you. I yield.
All righty. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, wireless caller 570. We've got like 1 minute, so if you want to do something quick, go right ahead.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I have a question about in the process of habeas corpus for an imprisoned person. After the default judgment has been filed, is it appropriate for a next friend to go to the federal courthouse to see if the habeas corpus documents have actually been docketed in the federal court?
Well, yeah, there's nothing, of course. You should, if you want to do that, of course you should. Yeah, absolutely. And if not, report it to us, and then if you do an affidavit on it, then we can start the process to add more, to pile on top of that towards that judge and the clerk, for not because we know it's a conspiracy between the two.
Okay, I have another question, please. So if a habeas corpus has been filed on an imprisoned person, is it appropriate for the next friend to call the prison and ask them to inform the next friend of when to be there to pick up the released person when they're released?
Well, I wouldn't do that because they'll have no answer and they'll not understand that, so... Unless the process has gone through, but you know, again, you'll know at that point. It's an uphill battle.
But I mean, would there be a case where somebody would be released and just be let out and to just stand there in the snow?
The law requires at the moment of the filing of the default with an affidavit of default and the filing of the default, and we even add on top of that a memorandum of the decision of the fault. And once that is filed, they are to immediately release that prisoner. And actually, if the sheriff understood what was going on here, he gets copied a letter of these papers. And if no one responded to that, and when he sees the default, well, first of all, since there was no response and he would know because he wasn't called, then he should be calling the judge to inform him that he's releasing the prisoner because of the default in the system. But the sheriff doesn't understand that. They're ignorant, just as ignorant as we are to the Constitution, but we're doing something about it. We're educating ourselves and bringing it back, and the sheriff needs to do this too. If the sheriffs only understood the power and the authority that they've got, they can straighten this whole nation out overnight. They themselves.
All right, I got to go
because we're past the time. Okay. And do call back next week and try to get in a little early. What I will do, there's a few people I didn't get to yet. Well, actually, it looks like I got to everybody. No, there's a couple people I didn't. But anyway... next week, we'll call in for those who were at the end of the call if they want to get in, get them into the queue first, or anybody that hasn't been into the queue in the past couple of weeks for those people to get in first and then others after them. But with that, we're going to end the call for the night and appreciate everyone coming. Lord willing, we will be back next Monday. And don't forget, we also have an education process goes on Tuesday. Evenings, and also we have Bible studies on Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time every Sunday. Just click on the Bible on the right-hand side for more information. Okay, with that, thanks for coming. Good night. God bless.
Amen.